Senators, we believe that these titans are just the tip of the iceberg.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 121 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a big, big show coming up for you today.
Our main review this time around is going to be a big old monster movie. It's Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Also, our topic this time is our top three black and white films. This is a first for us, and I'll be honest, there's a hell of a lot to choose from.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Seems pretty much every film prior to 1950 was black and white.
And Ben, you hate every black and white film ever made.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
This was quite tough.
Sorry, dude.
Our rewatch this time round is a small Danish film that was Oscar nominated and starring the great Mads Mikkelsen. It is The Hunt.
On Movie Masturbate, we are going to be masturbating over the Coen brothers. Not a singular, but a plural.
All-time greats.
That's unbelievable.
That's going to be good. That's going to be good.
Talking about what's going to be good, a brand new game show's on the way.
Yay!
I'm not going to tell you. You know the score by now. I'm not even going to tease and go, do you know what? You're just not going to know anything. You just got to stick around and it'll be here in about an hour's time.
That is savage.
I know.
And we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We're going to give away a ridiculous amount of prizes and we'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Before we get into the show, though, we got some big news, haven't we?
We have. We're breaking up.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye.
We've announced our very first and probably last live show called the Skip Fest. Now, these tickets went on sale, as you listened to this, last weekend, and they sold out in less than 3 hours' time.
Yeah.
So we are blown away, genuinely.
Pretty
it's a
much.
Bit insane, and we can't wait. Because it's sold out, people are already DMing and sending messages. We've got no tickets left, but we've kept two aside for the competition that's coming up on today's episode.
Oh, we Very are good. Nice.
Before you two get too excited, it's your tickets we're giving away.
Okay.
It's going to be a complete success. You. Are you guys happy? Are you going to be excited?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Bring it on.
As you say, it's our first and possibly the last, because I think I'm going to have some sort of live beeping device to use, because I can cut out all your nonsense when we record an episode, but live, it's going to be tough.
I was there yesterday and I was thinking of ideas, just brainstorming little things, and I was thinking, what can I get past Ben? Like, what will I actually get past? And I was sitting there literally thinking, should I order off eBay some bingo booklets for pedo bingo?
Oh my God.
And I literally thought, there you go. I was like,
shaking his head.
I was like, I need to rethink this. Straight away.
He's pulling out his veto card.
You need to just lock me down, dude.
No, I know. But we won't be playing pedo bingo, but we are going to be playing other games, aren't we? We're
going
to bring some of our famous games that we played on the show to the live audience. We'll have a bit of a Q&A.
Yep.
And, you know, whatever else happens on the day. We're going to get drunk, that much
is
true.
Yeah.
Did you know, this is the actual fact. I went to the venue yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It holds 100 people, which is going to be great. You can drink in there till 20 past 4 in the morning.
Amazing.
It's only last orders at 4 a.m.
Shut the front door.
We're not leaving until those doors close.
No.
I can't wait.
And the bonus is it's a 5-minute walk from my house, so I can then just stumble home.
He says this, but it'll be a 35-minute stumble.
Yeah,
after
exactly.
That.
Yeah.
Very true.
Didn't say it was a
Very
straight true. Line.
Half 6, where's Ben? Nearly home.
It's taking a detour.
But we want everyone that has got a ticket to really enjoy it, get drunk with us, and just have a massive party.
That's exactly it, and thank you very much, all of you who have bought a ticket. So let's show the people what they've been buying a ticket
Why
for,
not?
What it's all about. Let's get started.
The topic on this episode is the top three black and white films. It's quite self-explanatory, really, isn't it? No one needs to have some big detailed reason why it is.
If it's black and white, tick.
It is as simple as black and white.
Yeah.
There we go. Like Michael Jackson said. That's a good song, actually. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get on with the show. Already I'm saying that after 2 minutes in. Ben, I want to hear your first black and white choice, please.
Raging Bull.
Oh. Yes, I've got it too.
I thought you were. It's Martin Scorsese's classic boxing drama starring Robert De Niro as Jake LaMotta. And it really, at its essence, it's a story about a man who could have been a legend, but he couldn't get out of his own way. He kept giving in to his own worst impulses with regards to his anger and his paranoia. It's all about De Niro, isn't it, this film, Mark? It's all about the performance of the lead man.
I think when we masturbated over him, it made my top choice. I think he's never, ever excelled this performance. It's unbelievable, dude.
Mm-hmm. especially seeing the transition from the young Jake, who was, you know, fit and healthy and had the world at his feet, at the top of his game, but then he lets his anger get the better of him and he becomes this washed-up, overweight Jake that we see in the latter years of the film.
He's violent as well, absolutely horrendous, and the way his temper is and the way he falls down this downward spiral, his life just crumbles and you feel for him, but he's not a nice guy. You're not cheering him on because he's a horrible, horrible human, but it's a tough watch, isn't it, dude?
It's a really tough watch, and I think the scene that epitomises that is when LaMotta is in the jail cell towards the end of the film, and he just breaks down, he's crying, he's punching the prison walls, and I think it might be the best work that De Niro has ever done. And unsurprisingly, he won the Best Actor Oscar for that.
He really punched that wall, didn't he?
He did. That's not walloping it.
Yeah, that's not balsa wood, is it? Or polystyrene.
It always surprises me with this film that it was actually 1980 it came out. Everyone's like, what? But the only reason they did it black and white is because it was his love and respect for the 1940s. Scorsese wanted it to be like the original that he remembered when he was growing up watching these matches with his dad. This film looks stunning. It's not like Rocky. People compare it, but the actual cinematography and the way it's filmed, the way it's directed, you're there, you can see it, and you feel it, don't you? You feel what it'd be like to be in the ring with such a beast.
And that's the key, in the ring. So what Scorsese did on purpose is he didn't film the fights from outside in the crowd like a lot of boxing films did. He filmed it from inside the ring, so you're up close and personal with the boxers. You see every look on their face, you feel every punch, and it makes it all the more dramatic when you can see LaMotta getting whomped later on. I think it's the final fight, is it, against Robinson?
Yep.
When he's battered to hell, he's got blood pissing everywhere, and because the camera's right in his face, you really feel it. You feel everything he's going through.
It's horrible. It's a tough watch, because that's what I think your vision would be if you're put up against a proper pro boxer. Mm-hmm. It'd be absolutely horrific. Like, it's too intense at times.
There's one shot I love as well in that Robinson fight. It's after the fight has ended and it's been a bloodbath. There's a close-up on one of the ropes, and it's a white rope with a big splash of blood on it dripping off, and I think this is where the black and white really comes into play, because the blood, it looks black against the white rope. It stands in stark contrast. I think if it would have been in colour, the red and white would have looked fine as well, but it's the dark, dark, almost black against the white makes it look even stronger an image,
like viscous.
It's like tar dripping off, but it's beautiful.
One of my favourite scenes in cinema history, it goes that far in my estimations, is when he accuses his brother of having an affair with his wife. The tension, I've never seen like anything before. I used to watch this with my dad, like I said, growing up. He loves boxing, he makes me watch all these films, but this, I remember sitting there on the edge of my seat, even as a younger kid, you know, you don't really get that fazed by these films. I remember sitting there, just couldn't take my eyes off the screen, and that's when I thought, and that, again, you didn't really know who these actors were. I just knew that guy on screen was going to be the best actor in the world, and it was De Niro. And when you establish and go, oh, okay, I'm starting to take an interest in films, you realise why he's probably the best actor of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of his brother, how great was Joe Pesci as well?
Oh, my Lord.
Pesci was practically an unknown in 1980. I think he'd done a short film and a TV film. I'm pretty sure this was his first theatrical movie, and he was phenomenal. There's a scene where he sees LaMotta's wife cheating on him with a gangster, and he just beats the living hell out of the gangster, and it's that trademark explosive rage that we know so fondly now from Pesci's work. But again, you know, he was nominated for an Oscar in what was effectively his first film role. Mm-hmm. Brilliant performance.
He's like a pit bull.
He is.
That's the word.
A pit bull that acts in his spare time.
Yeah. And he's now taken a lot of time off. I think he's had family issues or money issues. He's doing something that's prevented him from acting now. I think he's chose to like walk away. But aren't we getting him back on the screen soon?
Yeah, he's going to be in The Irishman.
The new
Scorsese film with De Niro and Pacino.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Straight to Netflix, though. That's brave.
It is, yeah.
Just shows the way the future's going.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. My choice, my first one, is Night of the Living Dead.
Awesome film. Mm-hmm.
Directed by George A. Romero, and it follows a group of people who find themselves amongst an attack from flesh-eating beings, and all they can do really is just barricade themselves from all of this peril. And it's considered to be the pioneering film of the zombie genre. And when you watch it, it has that very low-budget quality to it. It doesn't look very slick. It's almost a B-movie feel, if you think, because the way how it's shot is very invasive too. A lot of the camera work is right in the faces of these actors, so it feels very, very claustrophobic. But it's also on a Dutch angle. Now, too many Dutch angles gets a little bit repetitive. Hello, Battlefield Earth, I'm looking at you.
Oh, Jesus.
But it works for this film because it gives that otherworldly feel to it. Also, the music on this is so good. You have that classic 1960s orchestral music that you see in the old films, but it also has this experimental sci-fi kind of noise to it. There's a particular scene, I'm not going to go to the ending, so I'll talk on that in a second, but there's a scene where a young zombie girl attacks this woman with a trowel and just repeatedly stabs her in the chest. Mm-hmm. And the sound that emits from this woman's voice, it goes into extraterrestrial territory. It's just this high-pitched scream and it warbles. It's completely
Can we hear it? Come
time.
On, let's hear your impression. Yeah.
Not very, that's not great.
No, that's terrible.
Watch the film instead. I do not give it justice. I'm very aware of this. But of course, the twist and the ending, I think this is what makes this film so well known. These guys have gone through hell and high water to try to get these zombies away from them, and they succeed. All but one succeeds, and that's a guy called Ben.
Hey.
Exactly. Representing for the Bens.
Yeah.
He survives the night, and you think he's going to walk away and live his life, but no. The police come, they see him, and they shoot him because they think he's a zombie too. Oh. And it's devastating, but it's also social commentary on the high tension of sort of the civil sort of riots that were happening amongst like black people. And it's a real statement too. But my God, it's so haunting. And I know that, Mark, you like a lot of zombie movies, as do I.
This is one of the blueprints, wasn't it, really? Mm-hmm. This set the tone for how many people now have been inspired by this. People like Edgar Wright, you see these homages to him
exactly.
all the time.
Exactly.
John Carpenter, all these guys. He's one of the most well-respected men in horror, and for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
This film is gritty. It looks disgusting because it's done so cheaply. So when you're watching it, it's got that flick and it's got that. And they keep trying to restore it. So like, here's the new 4K. Here's the new Blu-ray. Yeah. We've remastered it. Leave it.
Yeah.
When I want it, when I watch it, I want to watch it like it's on a VHS. Mm-hmm. I want to see those screens kind of slightly move and it not being very good because that's what I want. That's the feel I want.
It's part of the charm of those.
Yeah. It sucks that they don't do that.
I know. It also delivered the classic line of, they're coming to get you, Barbara.
Yes, which has now been used many, many times on the amazing Shaun of the Dead. Well, I've already been, so it's back round to Ben already.
And I'm going with 1992's Man Bites Dog.
Oh my God!
Have either of you seen this film?
A long time ago.
So I'll fill you in. It's a pitch black comedy mockumentary from Belgium about a documentary crew following a serial killer as he goes about his grisly business. The crew then start to identify with the killer and gradually get more and more involved in his depraved acts. A perfect example of the tone of this film comes right at the start. The serial killer, Benoit, he's on a train and he murders this woman, he garrots her, and then he dumps her body in a river, which is what he always does with his victims. But he casually explains to the camera about the correct ratio of rocks to body mass that you have to dispose of a body, and how that you don't need as many for kids, but you do need more for midgets, his word, not mine, because they're denser. And he's just explaining this completely dispassionately to the screen. And between the killings, he muses to the camera his thoughts on various topics, including art and urban planning and the mating habits of pigeons. And he writes really terrible poetry that he thinks is really profound and reads that to the screen as well. But he's not remotely threatening or sinister. He's a total goof, and he looks like an estate agent. You wouldn't find him threatening if you met him in the street, which is what makes his killings all the more powerful, I think, because he's so mundane. He just doesn't seem like the murderous type.
Is it a bit like sort of Patrick Bateman, that kind of character? Yeah. Not the confidence, but the look.
Yeah, exactly. Just the sort of dude that you would expect to see, you know, selling you something or being a complete douche bro and like, sleazing on chicks, but you wouldn't expect him to be murdering them afterwards.
Horrible.
One of the funniest parts of the film is when he and the camera crew, they run into another camera crew who happened to be following an Italian serial killer around at the same time.
As you do.
It's a great little joke. But the film gradually gets darker and darker and darker as the film goes on. Once the camera crews start involving themselves in the crimes, the kind of humour stops. For example, there's a scene where the camera crew go out and get drunk with the serial killer, and then all of them go and gang rape this woman, which they film. And then they eviscerate the woman afterwards as well. And then it ends in basically a bloodbath. Everyone dies. So the humour kind of stops as it gets towards the end. It's a very difficult watch, but it's an incredible film. It was made by student filmmakers for essentially no money, but it managed to get into the Cannes Film Festival, where it won the International Critics Prize.
Wow.
And it's even been released as a Criterion Collection release, which
fair play.
You know, only important films generally do. So this almost no-budget black and white 90s Belgian film about a serial killer being followed by a documentary crew. It's a pretty big deal.
I never realised till now, and I've heard the film, I've seen the cover, such an iconic cover, absolutely gorgeous. And the fact that, like you said, Criterion have took it on, but I didn't actually know it was made by students. I thought it was some director's early work who's now, you know, the next big thing. That blows my mind.
Well, you think not a lot of production companies would probably greenlight those kind of stories anymore, but that's why it's so important to back and have faith in original stories because it's worth a watch. You've got to watch it at least once, I think. But instead we just get reboot after reboot after reboot.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Hopefully this won't be reboot.
Oh, thanks.
Could you imagine an American's take on it? It'd be awful, wouldn't it?
Starring Will Smith.
Yeah. And Tara Reid.
Yeah, woman bites cat.
Tara Reid.
Yeah, she needs to come back.
Nope. No, she doesn't.
There's no more Sharknado films. At the moment, she's not working.
That's true.
Oh, really?
I don't even think she's at MCM. That's how bad it's getting. So, Christ. You know what I mean? That's when you know it's bad.
My choice. I'm going back in time for 1955. So I've gone for a film called The Night of the Hunter. Now, have any of you two heard of it?
I've heard the name. I don't know what it's about.
Okay.
Same.
Well, you're at the right place. It's a thriller starring Robert Mitchum, who is Harry, and he is a serial killer who masquerades as a deeply religious preacher who kills vulnerable rich women and runs off with their cash. He's very blatant about this, especially when you meet him at the first time. And what he does is he manages to get himself chucked into prison, and he ends up talking to a lad on top of his bed. I know, right? And he says that he's hidden $10,000 somewhere, but he's not telling him where it is. So he finds out where this guy lived, and he finds out he's got a widow and he's got two kids. So he marries this lady. Then he decides to be a bit of a bell end and off her.
Oh.
Kaput. Dead. Right. Yeah. Kills her.
Things did get quite intense then, didn't
they?
I mean,
this was the 1950s. They didn't even have Wi-Fi back in the day. But it's up to these kids to try and protect this money and not let him get away with it. So he decides he's going to kill them instead.
Fucking hell.
It's quite dark.
A lot of killings.
Yeah, well, he's not. He loves killing. It's his favourite thing to do. But it's so tense whenever Robert Mitchum is on screen because he's so imposing. Mm-hmm. He has this domineering presence that fills the scene, and it makes anybody that's opposite him very, very nervous. And one particular scene that he's famous for is a boat scene. He's chasing these kids down the river. They manage to escape him and get on a rowing boat and start to drift away. But he's sort of sluggishly going after him because he's stuck in mud, and he's trying to reach him and just scream really primally. And it's scary because these kids, you think they are going to get garrotted. You think they're going to get slaughtered. They're really not safe throughout this whole film. And Robert Mitchum, I tell you what, I didn't really know much about him because I'm a bit of a snob. Mm-hmm. But he was a legend. He was a great actor. And it's a shame that probably not a lot of people know about this. Also, one of the main things is he has love and hate tattooed on his knuckles. So any guest that used to be on the Jeremy Kyle show probably watched that and went, yeah, that's a good idea.
The former Jeremy Kyle show.
The former, oh, yeah.
How good was that day?
My God.
Amazing. I was like, so good.
Finally.
And about 15 years late.
Yeah, just a bit.
But all those people at home not working, work shy bastards.
Yeah, work shy sort of bastards.
What are they going to watch?
It's just bear baiting.
Yeah.
But anyway, Night of the Hunter is great.
Yeah, sounds good. I can't really add much to it, to be honest. I've not seen
it. I'll check it out, though.
It sounds great. Mm-hmm. Sounds. I'll check it out. Which means fuck
you'll
all.
Are you right? Yeah.
My next film comes from 1974. Young Frankenstein.
Okay.
Mel Brooks. Everyone always talks about Gene Wilder's performance in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as his best. Don't get me wrong, as Willy Wonka, he's sensational, but in this film, it's my favourite performance. And he also co-wrote it as well, which a lot of people know. Everyone thinks Mel Brooks did it all. He didn't. He had half a friend. Come and join him. Not half.
Half of him.
Him and Gene together sat
terrifying.
Down and they did this film. And I think it's great. Obviously, the story's about his grandson trying to prove that his granddad's not actually mental or insane. Have you both seen this film?
A long time ago.
Yes.
A long, long time ago. Okay, so it's funny. That's the one thing I like about it. It's not racist. It's not young. It's not Mel Brooks.
Oh, brilliant. Does that need to be a qualifier?
Yeah. Well,
I like this film because it's not racist.
Before I go into it,
because
it's not a racist
Blazing
film.
Saddles was quite racist.
It's not racist. It has race-based jokes. Okay. It's not a racist film, and Mel Brooks is not a racist person.
That's all right, then.
Educate yourself. Well,
this film is not racist anyway. Just putting it out there like every topic choice.
There we go.
But it's funny. Some of the scenes that really make me laugh, when we get to finally meet this monster of Frankenstein, we see him sitting in a tuxedo, which is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We see him sitting in bed with a cigar, and it's that toilet city humour that back then just makes me laugh. I don't know why, but it just tickles me in a way. My favourite character in it is Igor. We know him. He's the hunchback kind of servant who's played by, and this is a great surname, Marty Feldman.
Yeah.
And his eyes alone. I don't know what it is about them,
And
the way they kind of just stick out, and they're never straight. They're all weird. And every time he's got this like sheet over his head and he's got this little sort of outfit on, I just can't help but laugh. The way he looks is hilarious. Mm-hmm. Every time he comes on the screen, and it's years after years I can keep watching this film, I find it as funny as the first time I saw him. He's just ridiculous. He's just got this little face. It's something like you get off Monty Python.
Yeah,
it's that sort of humour, and it works so well. And for me, it's probably Mel Brooks' best work.
Mel Brooks' type of humour for me is timeless.
Yeah.
It's not just that film, it is films like Blazing Saddles and The Producers will never not be funny.
Yeah.
Humour will always last, I think.
It's good.
Oh, I really want to watch The Producers now.
I've not seen that one.
It's so good. Yeah. Springtime for Nazis or Springtime in Hitler. That was it.
Has he been in the pot? No.
Who, Hitler?
No.
I hope not.
Next week we're masturbating over Hitler.
Jesus.
Fucking hell, that's Christ. Turned out. Right, Ben, save me, dude, because I don't want to get. I want to get away from this.
My final pick is from 1964, and it is Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, of course.
Classic choice.
Exactly. It is indeed Stanley Kubrick's classic Cold War satire. It features one of the all-time great performances from Peter Sellers as the upright RAF officer Captain Mandrake, the calm and reasonable US President Merkin Muffley, and the unhinged former Nazi scientist Dr. Strangelove. Many actors since then have gone down the route of playing multiple characters in their films. We've seen Eddie Murphy do it, Mike Myers, Adam Sandler, for example. But none of them have ever done it with the gusto and the hilarity of Sellers, who was a comic genius. Mark's looking at me like he wants to make a Norbit joke.
I'm not going to. I think we've had enough over the nearly five years of Skip to the End. Norbit doesn't need a mention again. But you know me too well, because I'm just about to.
But just think of Peter Sellers as Strangelove. Think of the bit when he's failing to control one of his hands. And it instantly it keeps making Nazi salutes or trying to strangle him. It's just incredible physical comedy, which Sellers was so good for. And the film has some of the most famous imagery in film as well. Think of the scene of Major Kong riding the hydrogen bomb as it descends upon the Soviet Union.
That's incredible, man.
It is, and it's been parodied countless times, arguably most famously in a great episode of The Simpsons.
Yes!
Which parodies everything. Even the war room, where much of the film takes place, has been parodied. Yeah. You know, that huge circular table with the massive map board behind it. An example of that being parodied was Muse. Their video for Time Is Running Out was based on that.
Yeah.
You know. An example of how much of a perfectionist Stanley Kubrick was, he insisted that the table in the war room was covered in green baize because he wanted to suggest the idea that these powerful men were playing poker over the fate of the world. Now, bearing in mind, you can't see green baize in a black and white film, but he still wanted it there to make that point. That's how much he cared about the details, every little detail of the film. And what this film does so well is it uses those limitations of black and white photography to its advantage. It utilises light and shade to create a varied palette within a narrow spectrum. It's one of the reasons why the film still looks absolutely amazing today, 55 years
after it was made. Man. I bought the Blu-ray because I like the Kubrick Steel books. I want them all. I'm a completist. I get like 7, I need the 8th. Even if it's Eyes Wide Shut, I need to have it.
Shouldn't have to. Never seen it.
And that one, it's just itself. I think it's got the image of... it's a black and white image on the cover, but instantly it looks as if it was filmed 10 weeks ago. It looks 10 weeks, 10 years ago. It looks 10 weeks, exactly, in the middle of March. But, you know, definitely March, that one. It's got a March look. But, yeah, that film looks crystal clear. And where we said that stuff like Night of the Living Dead doesn't work, on this film, that's where you want it to look crystal clear.
You do. Mm-hmm.
It looks beautiful.
Because it always did and it always should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magnificent film.
I went to the Kubrick exhibition at the Design Museum last month.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fascinating. I ended up spending about an hour and a half there. I could have easily spent another hour there.
What's there? What did you see?
Artifacts from all of his films. You had the orange car that's seen in Clockwork Orange.
Uh-huh.
Bits of the naked models in the Moloko. You had costumes. You had props. The little girl's dresses from The Shining. I might have spaffed everywhere.
I thought you might say I might have walked out with one.
And I'm wearing it now.
Yeah.
It was fascinating, and of course it culminated with 2001 A Space Odyssey. Right at the end you had HAL, you had the kind of the lounge all set up in in sort of like the space kind of spaceship. But it is stunning.
Where's this done in Landon?
It's done in Landon Town, mate.
Why didn't you know about this?
It's near Kensington.
Skip Trip?
Yeah, Design Museum.
Me and Ben, we were quite like that.
When did you go?
I went in May. My other half surprised me.
How long ago was this?
May 6th.
Hmm.
Still going on. Yeah. Still going on.
That would be good.
There are still
tickets.
Could
have mentioned it. It's not as if we don't record a movies podcast together.
Yeah.
Jesus
Christ.
I don't know.
I don't know why we bother.
Should we get a download about her next week?
Yeah.
You already are.
Yeah, you need to learn. The only way is to have revenge. So we're going. We had got you a ticket, but fuck it, Benny's having it.
Yeah.
Anyway, you'll learn.
Are you doing this just because it's out of love?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Love.
But it sounds good.
Good.
I want to go. I bet it's finished like today, to be spiteful.
Still out for 2 months.
Well, okay.
Still going on. Don't you worry.
Cool.
Good.
Is it your final choice now, Peach?
It is. I've gone for a Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life.
Ooh.
I don't care what you think.
Sorry,
it's my choice.
No, I was just doing a fart, just randomly noised. It's nothing. I love your and respect every opinion you come out with.
Bullshit.
Like the film.
I don't care. It's my favourite. That's why it's in my top three. So, it stars James Stewart as the kind-hearted George Bailey, who can't seem to get his life in order at the end. Because of his good nature, he ends up having to fill in the gaps for residents, so he almost puts others before himself, and ultimately this gradually leads him to financial problems and an assassination on his character completely. But one day he decides he's going to end it all and jump over a river, but a guardian angel called Clarence pops up at the right time to save him. He wishes that he was never born, so Clarence shows him exactly what happens if this happened. Not good things happen in this little town. He's very, very distraught, and he decides that the best thing to do is actually realise he wants to live. And he does have a place in the universe. It's a very schmaltzy film, I know. I know it's sugar-coated. I know it's very saccharine for some people. But the fact it's in black and white makes it almost timeless in its own right. There has been some technical versions that came out about probably 10 years ago. It's not worth it. It looks ugly, gross, disgusting, bleh. But for me, it makes Christmas. It's a film I will watch every single year come December time. I love it. I think it's a timeless, timeless film.
It's sickening, this film.
There we go.
He wishes he was never born. I wish the director was never born.
Oh, my Lord.
You're right. It's saccharine. I don't know how you can watch it without getting diabetes.
That's because I'm type 1, baby. Yeah.
It's not going to insult your choice, because that's fair.
Oh, like that film wasn't racist.
But when it comes to Christmas, there's any, like, Die Hard. Do you know what I mean?
An Elf.
Gremlins, an Elf. Like, why would you then need to spend any more time watching this? It's on telly anyway. It's Channel 4 on. It'll be on.
So is Shaun of the Dead, but you don't hear me complaining.
Nah, fair point.
Thank you.
I don't know what to say.
A lot of people do like it, though, Gemma, to be fair. Mark and I just being miserable, but it is a very popular film and has been for many, many decades.
Indeed.
Should we have some cider while we're sitting here?
Good idea.
Do you want to try this new strawberries and cream English cider from our good friends Brothers?
Say what?
Ooh. Let's do it. Let's toast to Gemma's choices.
Yay!
Well done, Gem.
Thank you.
Woo! Never going to watch a film.
It's like the old school sweets. I like it. Right, it's my final choice. I think you both know what I'm going to pick. It's Clerks.
I thought it was going to be Dead Man's Shoes.
Jesus.
Here we go, Ben.
Christ.
This was one of the first films I watched at uni where I realised that films could talk like humans. You can swear, you can be wrong, and you can just get away. It's not the American Pie style humour. It's words like jizz mopper and words like that that I find more funny than just the American jock crappy
what,
American
what humans
films.
Do you experience if that's what you think human speech is like?
Honestly, you should have
seen most of my time with you two, so that's
you should have seen Ben's face.
He'd forgot that this was black and white, I think, for a second, and thought, oh my god. But you know my love for Kevin Smith. Ben, you don't hate him, do you? Let's just get this on the table right now.
I like the guy. He seems like a very genuine, very funny man.
Yeah.
I've got his book. I've not got around to reading it yet. Yeah. I know you've seen a lot of his stage shows, and I hear he puts on a hell of a show. I have no issues with the guy at all. I just don't like his films.
That's fair. And you love his podcast is great, and what he does, his Q&As and stuff, absolutely awesome. But for his debut, to know that he sold his comic book collection, maxed out some credit cards, and then filmed it after his own job in a shitty retail store, and it still looks great, and it's got to Cannes, like you mentioned, Ben, with one of your choices, and it did very well. Tarantino loved it, and then it exploded, you know. Then he got to make films like Chasing Amy, Morat's Dogma, Red State, all these huge films. I understand his latest work isn't his best, but this is where it all started. On such a small budget, to give us characters like Dante, who we all related to when we've worked in retail, we hate the customers, we don't want to be there. Everything they say, these stupid things like walking up and saying, excuse me, do you sell eggs, while standing by the egg counter, all these sorts of things. You just think to yourself, I relate. I can remember working in HMV and having customers coming up to me saying, do you sell CDs and stuff? And it's like, for fuck's sake, are you such a moron? You can't open your eyes for yourself. I hate retail. I'm so glad I'm out of it.
Oh, man, I know. I used to work in a camping shop and have people ask me questions like, how robust is this tent? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Just buy the fucking thing.
I can imagine that job being quite tense. But anyway, Jay and Silent Bob are some of my favourite characters in films. I think they're a great duo, very iconic. There we go, but they're fun. The film is great and I love it. I know, Ben, you're not a big fan of this one. You like, no. You love Dogma.
I do love Dogma.
But this one, you thought, I think you said it was some of the worst acting you'd ever seen.
It seems very amateurish, because it is.
Yeah, I think it made it for a few thousand, do you know what I mean? But I was lucky enough to go to the store with my dad when I went over to New Jersey, which was a great moment, got a photo outside there. And for me, Kevin Smith's one of my favourite humans on the planet. This film was always going to make it. I fucking love it. Gemma, come on, have you seen Clerks?
Yeah.
Do you like it? Yeah. There you go. There's your revenge on the last choice. Do you like any of Kevin Smith's work?
Hey, Dogma and Chase and Amy are great films. And Mallrats too.
Yes.
Mallrats is fantastic.
And we get Jay and Silent Bob the reboot soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope it's as good as Strike Back, the masterpiece that is.
Have you actually watched that one?
No.
Oh, it's got Anchorman in it, dude. Will Ferrell's in it.
Will Ferrell's been in a lot of shit, mate. That, doesn't, that doesn't prove anything.
What's the basketball one he's in?
Oh, that's, I like semi-pro. That one. Yeah, Semi-Pro's great.
Is it good? I've never seen that one. Yeah, I just, that's one of the ones on the list I've
it's
not
one where
seen.
He throws a basketball in the face of a cheerleader.
Yeah, it's got Woody Harrelson in as well. It's a good film.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. Talking about like social media that we talk about sometimes. I'm trying to
think
about
that. Seamless.
What a segue.
Talking about Woody Harrelson.
No.
There's an S in Harrelson, so social media. Fucking hell, I'm struggling. Ben, what have we had that's come through on
don't
social
know.
Media?
Why would Gemma? I
know? Why don't you ask me? You can ask me if you like.
What about Gemma? Gemma, yeah. What's come
through?
Oh, I'm
glad you asked. Yeah. I've got the answers. Well,
come on then, let's hear it.
Let's do it. Twitter, The Symphonist at Deeply Classical said, Dead of Night.
Not seen that.
The Innocents and Psycho.
Oh, so why have you not got Psycho?
Yeah, I would have put money on you having that, Gem.
We talked about it last summer. I wanted to give it a bit of a rest.
We talked about Raging Bull about 6 weeks ago, but, oh, God,
I thought
Psycho.
It was 10 weeks ago, mate.
Bloody hell.
Never mind. Maria Pass at Lizzie Borden 187 said, House on Haunted Hill. She also said, The Night of the Hunter. Mm-hmm. Right on. And Strangers on a Train.
That's a good film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that film.
Mm-mm. Night Prime at S. Salchley said, Casablanca. On the Waterfront, that's so good. And 12 Angry Men.
Again, a brilliant film.
Mm-hmm. Gary Flood at Gemini69G said The Maltese Falcon.
Yep, good one.
Citizen Kane.
Still never seen it.
Really?
No.
Sometimes want to pick it as a rewatch, because have you seen it, Gemma?
I have. Uni days.
It's Tommy Wiseau's favourite film.
Oh, it must be good.
So it must be good. Yeah. But I don't want to do it, and then it's shit, and it's long.
I know.
It's a very long film. It's like 5 days. They also said The Third Man.
Yes.
Again,
yeah,
classic film. Over to Facebook, we've got Paul Smith said, Seven Samurai. You're talking about a long film.
Yeah, that's, what, 3.5 hours long or something?
Yeah, yeah. If that. Also said, Invasion of the Body Snatchers and Doctor Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb.
Yay.
Lee Morgan, a little bit more modern choices here. We've got Control.
Yeah.
We have Cold War, and we have Lahaine.
That's a great
Lahaine is amazing.
Oh. Yeah, really good.
That's, yeah. And Cold War was what that was the one came out last year, wasn't it?
Brilliant film. I loved it. Darren J. Smith said Young Frankenstein. Also said Schindler's List and Night of the Living Dead.
Nice.
Then finally over to Insta. We got Joseph Angel at FrodoMan76. He said Bringing Up Baby. Very, very old classic film. Some Like It Hot and A Hard Day's Night.
Oh, that's a great film.
Yeah.
Very good Beatles movie.
Thank you, guys. Keep them coming in, as always.
Whose topic choice is it next?
It's my choice.
Ooh.
So on the next episode, we're going to enter a world of intrigue.
Ooh.
Ooh, exactly. Ooh.
I'm very intrigued already.
Well, let me tell you, on the next episode, we'll be talking about our top three mystery movies.
Ooh.
Ooh. I love it. We've been to see Godzilla, King of the Monsters, starring Kyle Chandler, Vera Farmiga, and Millie Bobby Brown. The secret is out. Monsters exist. But a new threat now faces our world, the Titans, gargantuan monsters that threaten the existence of humanity. One Titan, King Ghidorah, has awoken from their slumber and is now reclaiming the title as King of the Monsters. The cryptozoological agency Monarch knows this needs to be stopped, so they call on old pal Godzilla to stop the potential destruction of our living world. Chuck in the likes of Mothra and Rodan, it's a brawl to the end. Now guys, here is your spoiler alert. We are going to be talking about this movie in quite a lot of detail. So if you've yet to see the film and you want to hear our opinion, skip to the end of this segment and we'll be here. We'll be here. We'll just be waiting for you. So guys, Mark, I want to throw this to you first. Godzilla, King of the Monsters or King of the Turds?
Godzilla, god awful. This film for me had no script. Awful. Hardly any storyline. I felt like I needed to get a controller or a joypad and plug it in and play along. It was like a video game. I switched my brain off. I didn't give a fuck for it, but I enjoyed it just for being entertained visually for about 2.5 hours. I don't know what else to say. It was a tricky one. It was all right, you know?
Ben.
Gemma, in your intro, you said cryptozoological. I would love to have heard Mark Klein say that word. Go on, Mark.
Go on, here we go.
No. What's it even mean?
It's a study of animals that don't exist, effectively.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to do at uni.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah. It's probably the most like the Japanese originals of any of the American remakes, but there was still far too much human bullshit and not enough monster mayhem. The Godzilla nerd in me is always happy to see King Ghidorah, Rodan and Mothra throwing down, but I just wanted more. There just wasn't enough of that for me.
Mm-hmm. All noise but no clout for me. Characters that I didn't really care for. If you're going to market a film that promises a monster Royal Rumble, at least give it to us. Mm-hmm. Also, give it to us when it's the light of day and not when it's pissing it down with rain.
Ugh.
Disappointing and pretty boring in places.
The key there is the visuals. The visuals are so goddamn murky. Every battle was shrouded in snow or rain or smoke
Lightning.
Or dust or clouds. It was almost as bad as the Battle of Winterfell in Game of Thrones the other week. You just couldn't see what was happening. Terrible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you're going to have the big hitters like King Ghidorah and Mothra especially, I want to see them. I want to see what these amazing companies have created. But how can I when it's absolutely dark?
Do you agree that there was actually no performances from any actors that I remember? Or even, I don't remember them being on screen for more than a few minutes each time. I don't know what the story was. I genuinely don't.
Do you know what? I couldn't give a shit about any of the characters.
Yeah.
Could not give two monkeys. Now, the main perpetrator is Vera Farmiga. She is a wonderful actress, and we've seen her good work in like Bates Motel and Up in the Air. But she is so confusing. She does so many heel turns and then face turns. It doesn't give any depth to the character. She's literally on the screen just spouting lines. And it's not fair on her. Also, Charles Dance,
blah. Yeah. None of the characters had any development or individual characteristics. Nothing. They were completely interchangeable. The monsters had more definable characteristics than the humans. Vera, for me, I say Farmiga, you say Farmiga. I don't know which one's correct.
Let's scar the whole thing up.
For me, Vera Farmiga, her character had to die at the end.
Yes.
So her character dies, and it's the right thing to do because she was history's greatest monster. She's the one who unleashed these creatures and killed presumably millions.
She is king of the monsters.
And then at the end of the film, they're treating her like she's a good guy again. And they had to kill her, or else she would have had to go to prison for life, or be executed by lethal injection. The film didn't make any sense.
No.
How are we supposed to root for this woman who just killed millions of people?
No.
I don't get it.
But Superman did, remember? We have to feel sorry for him.
He killed a few thousand, smashing up the buildings in Metropolis.
So. Yeah, is it only when it hits like a million we start to think?
Right, yeah, that's right.
Also, if your mum's name's Martha.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I was waiting for that in Godzilla. Suddenly to stop and go, what's your name? Susan. Me too.
Oh, my God.
Let's call the whole thing off. But yeah.
The characters weren't used well, and the actors weren't used well either. Why the fuck would you hire two-time Oscar nominee Sally Hawkins, give her nothing to do, and then kill her off in the first hour?
I completely forgot she was in it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Only when you said it then, I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Offensive. It's just for the paycheck, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I know she was in the first film, the previous one from 5 years ago, but even still, you could have used her better than they have here. Embarrassing.
It's criminal. The only character I suppose I had a slight relation to was Millie Bobby Brown's character. You know, it's not her fault again. She's a great actress, but at least there was some kind of sympathy because she's looking at her mum going, what are you doing? Don't kill everybody. That's not right, hun.
It was weird seeing Eleven speak.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, that girl has a future that could be the next Natalie Portman.
Mm.
So to put her in a film like this and not even use her, it just doesn't make any sense. Mm. It might get a few of the Stranger Things fans buy a ticket, and yes, we get to see her talk. And she was good for what she needed to do, but it was like, look shocked, look a bit panicky, run and look a bit more panicky. She didn't do fuck all.
And that's exactly it. It's about clout. That's why they have people like Millie Bobby Brown. They've got Ken Watanabe, the great Ken Watanabe, pains me to say, they used him like a fangirl for Godzilla. Every line he said was, what about Godzilla? Oh, is Godzilla all right? Is Godzilla free? Maybe we can call on Godzilla. I love Godzilla. Blah, blah, blah. No, guy's a legend. Don't do that to him.
There were so many goddamn plot holes in the film as well. So there was one of the members of Watanabe's team was played by Zhang Ziyi, who we know from films like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon and all that. She's brilliant. Answer me this. What was the value of her revealing that she was a twin?
Zero.
We see a bit in the film where at one of the other sites, I think it's at the Mothra site, we see a woman who looks exactly like her. Then a couple of scenes later, she shows a photograph to show that she's a twin, her parents were twins or something, and she's like a third descendant twin. I assumed that would then play into something later on in the film.
Nope, that was it.
It never came up again.
We never saw her.
So why the fuck were we introduced to the twin?
This is why I love doing the podcast, because in my head I was thinking I missed something. I want Ben to tell me what we're about to find out because of this. I'm glad you're now on the same page going, there was nothing, dude.
No. I imagine there was a whole plot line that they just cut, but then forgot to cut that one scene earlier.
Fucking hell.
Pointless.
It was.
The film totally played into formulaic monster movie 101 rules too. It annoyed me to the point where I could definitely tell what was going to happen next. Mm-hmm. So when Dr. Emma, when she's going up to Mothra, and Mothra is like kind of like, you know, freaking out, and she goes up to him and just goes like, "It's okay, I understand." Puts her hand out. It's like, you don't understand. Oh my God, it's a giant moth. Stop trying to reason with it.
And we've seen that in Jurassic World. Yeah. It's the classic scene.
And even Carl Chandler does it.
Yeah.
When he's like, it's okay. It's okay. Oh.
It was just the same old shit. I enjoyed the final battle. I would have enjoyed it more if I could see it.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it for what it was, especially when Godzilla went thermonuclear.
Yeah.
When he just went bright red.
He lost his shit.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was very cool.
And the thing of the visuals, I know we didn't see a lot because of the contrast and all this we could have done with getting the remote out and altering it a bit. But when we did see it, it was done well. Yeah. Like, it did look spectacular. And as a summer blockbuster and that kind of huge film, that's sort of your demo thing for when you get a new TV. It looked great, didn't it?
My question is, was there a reason why they shrouded all of the battle scenes in rain and snow? Was it because the CGI wasn't as good as it should have been, so they needed to obscure it?
Maybe.
Hey, look at Venom.
Yeah. Look,
that should have been shrouded in snow.
Like, all of those action shots were in darkness, and I'm finding a lot of these big blockbuster films that have CGI always has battles at night now, and I'm thinking the exact same thing. Are they not good enough? Yeah. Are they on a tighter deadline?
But the budget, you know what I mean? It's not a cheap film. This wasn't made like Clerks.
It's not made for a tenner.
This is a big, big film.
No,
you know what I mean? There's a lot of money invested. I'm sure they had a decent guy on the visual effects going, I know what I'm doing.
But you say that, but how many times have we picked up on things in like Marvel films and said, oh, the CGI was ropey.
Hellboy.
And there's no one has more money than Marvel and Disney. And if they can't do it, then how can anyone else?
Because I was looking forward to seeing Mothra fly in the sky and you see the outline glow of its wings. But that's about it. You don't really see intricacies about it.
The script as well. That was the worst.
What script?
When they were talking about they couldn't discuss. I think they were discussing about an ancient creature, and they couldn't understand what the scientists were saying. So they were saying gonorrhea.
Oh God!
That joke. I literally was like, "Can we go now, Ben?" But we've only got another. Oh, there's another hour. Mm. That film was 2 hours 20.
It was so long. I was clock watching a lot.
And that joke, that gonorrhea joke that fell on its arse, was delivered by Thomas Middleditch from Silicon Valley, who's a very reliable comedic performer. Yeah. And even he can't sell a gonorrhea joke.
No.
Terrible.
And there were more than a few jokes like that just did not work at all.
There is one bit I liked about this film.
And the credits.
leaving. There was a shot of King Ghidorah after sort of whooping Rodan's and Godzilla's ass, and it's on top of a volcano, and you see this black cross at the bottom, and I thought it's almost like, religion is dead, I am your new god now. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a good visual.
And that's about it.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Come on. Go on, Mark, you started, you finish.
It's not that bad because, you know, it's toss. It's toss, but I'm not going to go like 3. I think that's too harsh. No. It's like a bang in the middle, let's go 5. Yeah. I don't think that's too offensive.
No, I think that's fine.
Okay.
I'd be inclined to give it the same. I think 5's fair.
I'm not. I'm going to give it a 4 because I'm being difficult. But from the total of mathematics, that does give us a score. Godzilla, King of the Monsters gets a skip to the end, 5 out of 10.
It's competition time!
That was better.
Thank you. You do say to me that I need to put more energy in it, and if you can hear, my throat's now fucked. So that worked really well.
You are bright red.
On our last episode, for episode 120, we reviewed Detective Pikachu. Wasn't quite the film we hoped, especially for you, Ben. You're a big Pokemon lover. Mm-hmm. Didn't quite deliver. But who did deliver? Warner Brothers. They gave us an unbelievable bundle, which included a light-up headband, which I know we all really want. Bracelet set, POC socket, beach ball, lunchbox.
What's a POC socket?
It goes on the back of your phone, and then you can kind of do stuff with it. So,
Like that. Ridiculous.
We'll get some of those made for Skip Fest.
What's that for?
No, we'll sell them £10 each. Really good. Yeah, limited edition. You get a detective hat, a light-up set of rings, a phone wallet, and some headphones.
So perfect if you're a 12-year-old.
Perfect. And the question we put out there was, who voices Pikachu in Detective Pikachu?
Ryan Reynolds.
It's true. And the winner is Danielle McMullen on email. So you'll be getting that bundle in the post. Hopefully you're older than 12. But if you're not, give it to someone you know. Do you know what I mean? If you're an adult walking around that on, you need to have a word of yourself. Our good friend's Last Exit to Nowhere came along, and because we were masturbating over the one, the only John Carpenter, they gave us a beautiful Halloween t-shirt. And the question we put out there was, who directed Halloween?
John Carpenter.
It's true. And on Instagram, we had Matt_Heyday. So he'll be getting that. Hopefully he'll be in his heyday. And also we had a Thing bundle, which had a tote bag, a mug. I'm going to keep doing them. I'm going to keep trying. A set of coasters and some wristbands. And we said, the question, real simple, MacReady is played by who?
Kurt Russell.
Who's our...
Dad.
There we go, that's correct. And Leah Bison is getting that on Twitter. Universal came along and they've released Secret Life of Pets 2. I like the first one, not seen the second. We reviewed it, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
That's crazy. And they have a headband, a bag, a water bottle, a towel and a stationery set. See how I've worked on saying bottle for you there? Because
it's bottle. A bottle. Yeah.
Bottle, man!
And we put it out there and said, what's everyone's favourite movie pet? And this is good. Amber Martin came and said, Cujo.
Wow!
I like that. So... that'll be being sent to you very, very soon. Funko came along, and for the topic, because we were doing our top three, what was it? Fantasy films.
It was.
Another good one. Lord of the Rings set of 13 pops. Now, I know you want these, Ben. I can see how much you... Is it your favourite film of all time?
Arguably, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece.
It's iconic.
What we put out there was, who plays Legolas?
Orlando Bloom.
It's true, and Andrew Cavett will be getting that in the post. Also, we had a Jareth pop. And now, what film's that from?
Labyrinth.
It is. And the question we put out there was, which singer stars in The Labyrinth?
David Bowie.
God, we're good today. And Polly Winter got that on Twitter. Finally, we had a Mike Myers pop, which is really smart. I've got one of those myself. Yeah.
Not Austin Powers, Mike
that
Myers.
That would
Michael
be good.
Michael Myers.
Michael Myers. Michael. 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 What year was Halloween released?
It was 1978.
It's true. And Ben Miller... on email, we'll be getting that.
Good.
And you know the score by now. All those Funkos I've just mentioned go as one big bundle for someone that left us a 5-star iTunes rating. This guy should get more than the bundles. He should get a medal. His name is Martha's Garden, okay? And he said 5-star, which is the most important part, but he's listened to 120 episodes, every special we've done, in 11 weeks and 2 days.
Holy macaroni.
That's overkill.
That's too much. You must be sick of us.
No,
you probably won't listen to us now to find out he's won because he's sick of us.
Sorry, Mr. Gardens.
But he did say that we're very good, so I appreciate that. On this time round, I think we deserve some prizes as well.
Yay.
So our good friends Last Exit to Nowhere have come along and given us some t-shirts. So Gemma, first up for you.
Danke schön.
What have you got there?
I've got Flynn's Arcade from Tron.
I love it. Ben, here for you.
Thank you. I've got Razor Cult books from Ghostbusters.
Ooh la la.
Ben, you're like mine. Look at this one from Blade Runner.
Very cool.
Aye.
Got some nice tees this time round.
Yeah.
And they're all available now from Last Exit to Nowhere. As we just reviewed Godzilla, King of Monsters, Warner Brothers come along. Ready, Ben, this is a bundle that you're going to go crazy for.
Please tell me there's headbands in there.
Pin it down.
Light up bracelets.
A laptop a laptop sticker. That a USB pen.
Shouldn't have been hard.
A light up cup. Some crew t-shirts. Some pins. Some earphones. Some socks.
Ooh.
Get ready. Some journals. A hoodie. And a mask that makes sounds when you light it up. That's pretty good.
What sounds? like my scream from Night of the Living Dead.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
About this laptop sticker.
Yeah.
What makes a sticker a laptop sticker? What would prevent you from sticking it to anything else?
Oh,
that's a
good question.
Man's got a point.
I will find out.
I demand
answers.
You
know. That can be the question to win this bundle. Basically, what we're going to say is the character Madison is played by which star from Stranger Things? Not easy.
No.
As we've just mentioned last exit. That's really tough. As we just mentioned, our good friends Last Exit, because they love black and white films, Ben, they agree with you. They love, it's one of their favourites, Doctor Strangelove.
Yeah.
So they've given us an 843rd Bomb Wing t-shirt.
Nice.
And they've said, who directed Doctor Strangelove? Does that seem pretty easy?
Seems we've mentioned it about 15 times.
Yeah, it should be right. Coming up soon, we've got a masturbate over the one and only...
Coen Brothers!
And this is good. They've given us a Big Lebowski, Jackie Treehorn tea, which I think you've got as well, haven't you, Ben?
No.
No, you're not. Have you, Gemma? One of us have got it.
No.
No? Well, I lose track of what we've got from them, but we've got quite a lot. Let's say Jeff Bridges plays which character in the film? Richard Sounds have come along, and this is... Remember we did the best guitarist for the Marshall speaker?
Oh,
it was our most... most response we've ever had from a competition. So I said, can we have another one? But I don't want to make it so guitar-y, it doesn't seem good. So let's say, and this will be interesting, what's the best gig you've ever been to?
Oh, that's good.
I'd like to know that. Yeah. What's yours, Ben?
Oh, God, that's a very good question.
Sorry, dude, for you under the bus, I'm just right on the spot.
Possibly when we saw Mastodon headline at Bloodstock a few years ago. That was incredible.
Incredible. Yeah. What's yours?
I really enjoyed Childish Gambino.
Oh.
That was amazing.
So what, BTS that you saw live at Wembley yesterday wasn't quite as good?
Oh, BTS.
Grow up, woman.
I would say it, but I know that you two would take the piss, so...
Yeah. For me, genuinely, honestly, Black Peaks at Milton Keynes was so intense, wasn't it? It was just a very special moment. But I think Deftones, when we saw them, it was either Wembley or Manchester. We went to one of them when they didn't play anything off Gore, and it was incredible. Yeah. They were so, so good. And I can't wait to go to Download in 2 weeks, because we're going to get loads of cool bands again.
Yeah, Slipknot, dude.
Oh, you've never seen them, have you?
No, I haven't.
They're going to blow your mind. And I'm looking forward to seeing the whole set of Rob Zombie, because I missed it last time because it clashed with Biffy. But Ben said it was the best band of the weekend.
It was the best band of that year, yeah.
Can't wait. Funko have come along and given us some Alfred Hitchcock Funkos.
Alfred Hitchcock.
His uncle. It's a really bad Funko. They've got the license for his uncle. His mate. So, yeah.
Maybe you get a laptop sticker with that one,
too. Be good.
New from Spunko. Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. But it's actually in black and white. That's quite cool. So what they're going to say is, let's say, what's your favourite film by him?
Okay.
By Alfred
Hitchcock. Oh!
I give up. Alfred Hitchcock.
Well done.
We couldn't tie anything else in. You know, we try and get it in like in conjunction with the episode and it works like this, but they've just given us the brand new set of Ghostbuster Funkos, which is really cool. So should we just say who plays Venkman in it?
Yep.
Yeah. Really simple. Now, I think we should give away 2 tickets to Skipfest.
Okay.
What do you want to do to let these people... I don't want it to just be a retweet or something like that. It needs to be the real fans that missed out. So what do you reckon?
I think they should have to write us a very short essay.
Yeah, 2,000 words.
Explaining why they love us and why they deserve the tickets.
That's fair. Doesn't have to be too long.
No, short essay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But just a justifiable reason.
Just a few hundred words.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just enough.
Okay, then. We never give shout-outs from people that ask for it on email. I think it's too much. I'm like, stop it. But this person came through this week. Now, Paul Powers has asked if we can give a shout-out to his new wife, Naomi. And I'm like, well, we're not going to do that. And they're expecting a baby that's going to be due in 2 days' time as this episode goes out. He says at the bottom, if we give him a shout-out on the episode, we can choose the middle name for that baby that's being born.
That's amazing.
Now, oh, if he does stick to it or not, it might be bullshit. And if you've just got on this episode to do that, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
But I'd like proof. Now, what would you like? It's going to be a girl.
Oh, it's a girl. Oh, that's a shame.
So I was thinking Ripley as a middle
name.
That's
quite good.
That's all right.
That's quite good.
All right.
Or Gemma.
No,
Poochie.
Poochie. Yes.
Look at that lovely little baby Poochie. Can we go Ripley?
I like Ripley.
Ripley's cool. It is decided.
And we need to see a photo of the birth certificate where we can clearly see Ripley as the official middle name.
Maybe we could be present, I don't know, but we need official...
Birth. Oh yeah, brilliant.
Yes. Stay at the top end, you don't want to go down the bottom end.
Yeah.
And her middle name will be Ripley!
I can't wait. If that happens, I'm chuffed.
Right. Yeah.
But if you want to know the winners, we're going to announce them all on the next episode.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we talk about a director's best piece of work. On the last episode, we picked famous brother-director duo of all time, the Coen brothers. There is a chuckload of films that we could choose from these guys, and I'm very, very excited to hear what both of you have got to offer. So, Ben, I want to throw this to you. What's your favourite Coen brothers movie of all time?
It was a very tough one because, as you say, they've got a lot to choose from and a hell of a lot of good films in their back catalogue. But for me, it could only be No Country for Old Men.
Lovely.
Perfect.
It's their classic modern western based on Cormac McCarthy's magnificent book. It's the story of a briefcase full of drug money, an out-of-his-depth poacher who stumbles on the cash, and a relentless hitman with a bowl haircut and a bolt gun. And then on top of that, you've got a world-weary sheriff who has to deal with the fallout of all of that. It's perfect. I literally cannot fault the film in any way, shape or form, and it could easily appear in my top 5 films of all time when we redo it again. It's 10 out of 10 flawless for me. I'd argue that it's the acting high point of every main actor involved, but particularly Tommy Lee Jones as Sheriff Bell, who's seen it all and realises that he's just not made for this life anymore. He's just reached his limit of what he can do. With these young guns unleashing such horror onto the world, he just can't he just can't even.
It's like he's seen it all, and this is another level extra, and he's gone, I'm out.
And that another level, that higher level, is, of course, Javier Bardem as Anton Chigurh. You could make the argument that he's the greatest villain in film history. He's a murderous bastard, but he's so calm and detached and disinterested, and that's what makes him all the more chilling. He's not some relentless psycho like the Joker or something. He's this calm, collected guy who seems... It seems like it's annoying him. He seems like the idea of having to, you know, worry about killing these people and move on and find this money, it's as if it's an imposition on him. He'd rather be doing something else. He just doesn't care. He's just doing his job like anyone else. The thing I like as well is he's not killing indiscriminately. He lets the toss of a coin decide the fate of his victims. And that's always some of the best scenes in the film.
Yeah.
Isn't it, you know? Mm-hmm. His performance alone would be legendary, but you've got to couple it with the haircut.
Yeah.
I am all for a bowl cut.
It makes him seem totally alien. And as well as the haircut, you've got the unique choice of weapon as well. Have you ever seen any other film where someone's walking around with an electric bolt gun?
No.
He is a villain for the ages. Amazingly, something I read the other day, which I didn't know, is that Heath Ledger was the first choice for Anton Chigurh. Yeah, he turned it down. He was busy at the time. I've no doubt that Ledger would have done a great job because he was a great actor. But Bardem is so indelible in the role that I can't conceive of anyone else being Anton Chigurh than him. The film, for me, it's an amazing combination of the Coen brothers' signature styles and the signature style of Cormac McCarthy. It's full of pitch black humour. It's full of shocking violence and twisted morality. They're a match made in heaven for me, the Coens and McCarthy. I'd love to see them do more together. And of course, the film looks absolutely gorgeous because the cinematographer is...
the one and only...
Dizzle!
Dizzle. Yes, let's refer to him as that from now on.
No, I shan't. It's Roger Deakins, of course. He's the best of all time, but he really excels with Westerns. No one can photograph desert vistas like Roger Deakins can. They're absolutely gorgeous. The film won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Adapted Screenplay at the Oscars in 2008, which is a hell of an achievement when you think that it was up against, in all of those categories, There Will Be Blood.
Fucking hell.
Which is another flawless masterpiece.
That's mad. Mm-hmm. I didn't realise that was the same year.
Yeah.
Hell of a year for cinema.
Hell of a year. So that's why that is my favourite Coen Brothers film.
I love that film. Mm-hmm. And I haven't watched it for years. As much as I love it, as much as then Ben's creaming over and I'm like, yep, I agree. Totally amazing. Absolutely amazing film. I actually can't remember the last time I watched it. It's probably 5 years ago.
Yeah. I think I'm with you there, buddy. I can't remember the last time I saw it. But I do want to see it again.
And it's full of great people. Even the people I've not mentioned, like Josh Brolin, for example, is the main guy.
I even
guy
forgot he's in it.
Yeah, exactly. Woody Harrelson's also in it.
See, again, another person who didn't even remember is in it. It's because the main guy steals the show the whole way through.
Exactly, yeah.
If you can go up against Thanos and you still steal the show, you've done a good job. Mm-hmm. You've done well.
Yeah.
Very good. I would have bet my mortgage on Ben picking that, if I'm honest.
He did.
Yes.
You're a poor man. Go on, and your choice.
The Big Lebowski.
Yep.
Okay.
Did you probably know I was going to say that?
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of my favourite films of all time. My favourite character in cinema, at times, I think, is the dude. He's amazing. And when we talk about actors that were born to play roles, I think Jeff Bridges, I know everyone says he's like it outside the cinema and that's him, and when he's not in character, he is the dude. But I can only see him as the dude. When we saw Thor recently and we've got that character now that's based on the dude and we see him with his glasses and we see Thor looking like him, he's still not the original dude. The guy in the cardigan, sipping a drink and just not giving a shit about the world. And if I do get to meet Jeff Bridges one day, and he is really like that, because everyone says he's that chilled, he smokes weed, allegedly, he chills, and he just drinks cocktails all day, then I want to hang out with him for the rest of my life.
I want to have a White Russian with Jeff Bridges.
That's the goal. Mm-hmm. That's my literally bucket list number one. But the film itself is all about him being mistaken for a millionaire, and then he goes on basically a revenge mission, not in the way that Ben talks about his film, about someone ruining their rug.
It really tied the room together as well.
It bloody did. And the fact that he uses his friends from bowling for help, and those, who else would you want in the world? John the motherfuck Goodman.
John the motherfuck Goodman.
Yes.
Oh.
Bloody hell. Who chose his middle name?
Yeah. Wasn't us. We went for Ripley.
But he's... Oh, shit, yeah, that might really happen. That's going to be amazing.
Well, why not call it motherfuck?
But as Walt, he's great, isn't he? John Goodman is just ruthless in that film. He has a... His kind of patience is not... It wears very thin, very quick. And the way that we see him pull out a gun whenever he wants, and he's very angry. But we haven't just got that. We've got Julianne Moore in the film. Do you know what I mean? An actual Oscar winner playing Maud, and I think she's fantastic in the film.
She is, yeah.
We've mentioned her today. Tara Reeves pops up.
Yeah,
she does.
This is when she used to do actual films.
Exactly. And Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Buscemi.
Yep.
There's fucking loads. The cast is absolutely outstanding. I've watched it 100 times and it never gets old. I think the characters in there are absolutely brilliant. The writing is fantastic. The sequences that you get, like the bowling sequences when he's going down the aisle and he looks up their skirts and the music that's playing and he's flying in the air. Yeah. It shouldn't work. It should look goofy. It should look a bit over the top. But for some reason, the way they do it, it's done well. I fucking love this film.
You mentioned there the cast, and I think how good the cast is in this film and how good they are in No Country for Old Men, it's a sign of the actors just want to work with the Coens. Coen films always have great casts because people want to work with them because they know the quality is going to be so high.
What are they doing next? Are they doing anything at the moment?
I'm not sure, actually.
I think they're chilling.
Mm. I don't know. I mean, obviously, after the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, I think they might just be having a well-deserved holiday.
Yeah.
I forgot that was them.
Yeah.
And we reviewed that. If you want to go back and listen, it's there for you now.
It's available on Netflix if you want to watch it.
I'll be honest as well. I thought this episode might be the episode where we have crossover for this. I'm surprised. Come on, Jam.
Can I guess what I think yours would be? Because you knew mine was No Country. I knew Mark's was Big Lebowski. I think yours is Fargo.
Bing, bing, bing,
yes.
Bing.
Yes.
So the Coens possess a gift of storytelling, visuals, and performances that really do leave an impression. And to me, this is everything that personifies their work with that criteria. It's loosely based on a true story, and it has everything you could possibly want to lock in your interest. So you've got despicable criminals motivated by money. You've got an innocent hostage whose only real crime is having a bit of a shit husband and terrible fashion sense. Mm-hmm. A spineless coward who orchestrates a failed kidnapping that snowballs into such bigger tragedy. And a heroic police chief who will guide the moral compass to get justice, which it needs. And she's absolutely wonderful. Frances Motherfuck McDormand.
Yep. They're related.
Who, of course, deserved the Best Actress Oscar, which she got. And if the story is enough of a hook, you've got her, you've got William H. Macy, again, Steve Buscemi. Perfect casting. And the cinematography encapsulates everything that a cold winter's day and night would be in Minnesota. And the cloak of white snow jarred against the red blood that spills onto it. It's stunning. We've always talked about blood and snow. It's like the perfect combo. And this film has it. It's absolutely stunning. And the score is haunting. It's isolating. Quite simply, it's not just one of their best films, but in my opinion, it's a GOAT. Greatest of all time.
It is a phenomenal film. And as you've alluded to there, it's the indelible characters. Yeah. Marge Gunderson is a Pantheon level, all time great character. William H. Macy's character as well. Yeah. One of his painted, you know, schlubby characters that, you know, is kind of emasculated and struggling like he always does with his hangdog expression. Yeah. And then Steve Buscemi as well. He's an indelible character. He's villainous little rat boy that he is.
Oh, he's such a rat boy. I just want to kick him across the road. Get out of my way.
That film as well has so many different tones, doesn't it? Yeah. You're laughing at one point. The other time you're seeing someone putting through a blender, like a tree destroyed. You know, it's such a good film.
But that speech by Marge Gunderson at the end when she can't fathom a human selfishness of just wanting some money, and in order to get it, they just have to kill somebody. It just makes no sense. And I totally agree with her. And it's just, it sticks with you after the credits have well gone. It's beautiful.
Again, it's flawless. All three of the films that we've picked here, I would call 10 out of 10s.
Yeah, agreed. And they're all very different.
Yes.
Even though it's the same directors.
That's what makes them so great. They will turn their hand to everything. And that doesn't mean everything they do is great.
No.
There are a few films of theirs that are utter, utter dog shit. But they're willing to try. And more often than not, they succeed.
I want to know what social media came with. Because this must be one of the most popular ones we've had in a very long time. Because there's so much to choose from.
Yes, we've had a huge response on social media for this. Chris, aka Keels811 on Instagram, said the correct answer is Fargo. All other answers are wrong.
Well,
I wouldn't agree with that, but Fargo, of course, is a magnificent film.
It is great, but there's far too many. That's also great.
Mm-hmm. On Twitter, Dave Roper, at DaveRoper77, I have a huge soft spot for The Man Who Wasn't There. Beautiful black and white cinematography and a wonderful noirish style and plot.
I've never seen that.
I don't think I have either.
I've seen it. It didn't do much for me, to be honest. Graham Doyle on Facebook has said, "Oh brother, where art thou? Beautiful looking, painfully funny, great music, perfect." Mark, you've still not seen it?
I don't think we both have seen it.
Don't worry, I'm not going on this alone.
And that's surprising because The Man Who Wasn't There was one of their smaller films. It flew under the radar. But Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is one of their bigger ones.
Mate, so Clooney, we should be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll do it.
Shall we?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it won't happen.
Stephen Adams on Twitter, at StephenAdams2, has said, Miller's Crossing is my personal favourite. I remember going to see it when it first came out.
Wow. So good.
Good memory, because that came out 29 years ago.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I wasn't even born.
Bullshit. on Facebook, Mike Hood. They've made so many great movies, but if I can only choose one, it's Inside Llewyn Davis.
Yes.
Great film, great soundtrack.
I haven't seen that one.
It's good.
The subject, matter just didn't interest me. It's like folk music or something, isn't it?
Yeah, but look at the main boy in it.
Oscar Isaac.
Yes, yeah. I don't remember his name.
I do love Oscar Isaac, but I just can't watch a film about folk music.
You've also got Justin Timberlake and Adam Driver.
Ooh, sign me up.
Adam Driver. Adam Driver's very good in it.
On Twitter, Gene Parmesan. Oh, Gene!
Got me again!
At Salazar's sister has said, I want to mention that Hail Caesar is pretty good. I really don't get the hate it receives. I didn't hate it, I just thought it was blah.
I thought it was average.
I think we reviewed it, didn't we?
I don't know. I think we gave some stuff away for it. Something like that. One, and was it, what's the one, is it Intolerable Cruelty?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
That's when I was like, nah.
And that was Clooney as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Shouldn't have to.
On Instagram, Paul Juicenip has said, my favourite movie of all time is The Hudsucker Proxy, a 20s period piece that turns into a fantasy. What could be more fun?
I
haven't seen Hudsucker Proxy. No, I've owned it for years and just never got around to watching it. On Twitter, Grand Moff Mike at Logos728 has said, for me, it will always be Raising Arizona. I still discover new jokes every time I watch it.
A great film.
I've not seen that in donkeys.
It's a hell of a good film.
Ben Sinclair McDonald on Facebook agrees with me. No Country for Old Men is just so damn beautiful. Cinematic perfection.
Nicely said.
On Twitter, The Fourth Dimension at Mike_J_Lord has said, genuinely don't think they've made a bad film. I disagree. But he said, for me, it's Barton Fink for its slightly scary, surreal look at the golden age of Hollywood.
That's one of the very early ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's another one alongside Hudsucker Proxy that I've owned and just never got round to watching them, even though I know I should.
At uni, everyone was always doing that. At like film school, everyone was talking about this as like the template for filmmaking, but never got round to it.
Simon Williams on Facebook, his pick here would have been my second choice. He said True Grit, a modern Western that can more than hold its own against the original. How it won no Academy Awards is a mystery.
It's a goddamn shame.
It is, because it was nominated for 10.
What?
And won none.
I'd be furious. I'd be absolutely furious.
Do you remember who it was up against in some of the categories?
I can't off the top of my head, no.
Well, they shouldn't have won. Full stop.
Yeah, whoever it was.
Done.
Fuck
give,
them.
Yeah, give back
10,
your
though,
Oscar.
That's mad, isn't it? Jeff Bridges in that. Outstanding.
Yeah, and Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And then finally, we've got Mark Jeno at Sparky Marky. He said, it will always be The Big Lebowski for me. Is that you? Have you just...
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I've definitely got it mentioned again.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He said, Jeff Bridges in his second finest role after Flynn in Tron and an excellent supporting cast.
Doesn't sound like Mark.
No. No, it's worded too well.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Every damn time.
It undoubtedly was one of our most popular ever, with a massive spread of films, so much so that I decided to read out 12 listener suggestions rather than the usual 10.
It did seem quite long, though.
Yeah. It was a very tight race for the top spot between Fargo, Big Lebowski and No Country for Old Men. With Fargo winning by one vote.
Come on, Fargo.
And the other two were tied for second.
That's nice.
Some of the lesser liked Coen Brothers films got votes. Even Intolerable Cruelty got
votes.
Bloody
hell, who was that?
I don't know.
But that one person.
But I blocked him.
Yeah.
We've not had a single vote for Burn After Reading.
Oh. Burn After Watching.
Which, it's a film I never liked. But a lot of people do seem to like it. I thought it was cack.
I didn't. Brad Pitt in that was just annoying.
Mm, yes.
Normally,
it was
I like him.
Gym bunny, wasn't he?
Yeah, not good.
Never mind at all.
Oh, we've ended this on a low.
Let's raise it back up then. It's time to pick out our next name. Gemma, is it you?
It's me.
Drum roll.
Dankeschön. Okay. On the next episode, we will be masturbating over a Clint Eastwood.
Ooh.
Our rewatch this time is The Hunt. In The Hunt, a small-town kindergarten teacher named Lucas is wrongly accused of molesting one of the children in his care, Clara, which causes his life to fall apart with dramatic consequences. The film was directed by Thomas Vinterberg, stars Mads Mikkelsen as Lucas and Annika Wedekopp as Clara, and was nominated for the Best Foreign Film Oscar. I have been looking forward to talking about this film with you guys for a long time. I want to get straight into it. I want to throw it over to you first, Gemma. What are your instant thoughts on The Hunt?
Firstly, thank you for bringing this as a rewatch.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've not seen this for a few years now, but it's a quiet, slow burner that seems to get louder as the story progresses. And to tackle such a horrifying subject, it's filmed and told in such an exquisite way that so many people would want to turn away from. Please don't, because you'd be making such a huge mistake by dismissing this movie. Mm-hmm. It's married with incredible acting, beautiful cinematography, and it's a film that rewards the viewer by covering every single cinematic basis. So thank you for bringing this.
Yeah, it's what I do, isn't it?
Do you like it?
You know,
it's all right.
Meh.
Mark.
I don't know how to top that. For me, it's emotionally draining. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. I wanted to cry a lot. I'm not physically able to cry. I'm dead inside. Ben rubs off on me and it goes...
Don't tell him what we get into off air.
But my God, how much... This film's just powerful, isn't it? I don't know any other word. It's just incredible. And when I think of films where one guy can carry it in every single scene, I always think of her. I always think that film itself is incredible. But I forget that Mads Mikkelsen is a one-man show in this, pretty much. And it's just an absolute textbook of how to act in every way. Unbelievable, dude. Unbelievable.
It's a heartbreaking movie, and it just goes to show how easy it is to be falsely accused of something and how it can ruin your life, especially when the accuser is a child who doesn't know any better. It also brings a light on how easily children can be led into making accusations. So there's a scene in the film where Clara, the young girl who first brings these accusations against Lucas, when she first says it to her teacher, she was doing it out of spite because she has a crush on Lucas, effectively, and he rebuffs her. So she says that she's seen his willy and it was standing up straight. And that was based on some porno pictures her big brother had showed her. The teacher then brings in someone who I assume to be like a social worker, and they then ask her about what happened. And then they're asking her leading questions. Mm-hmm. They're basically putting these ideas into her mind. She's a scared five-year-old girl, and she's just saying yes, 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 because she wants the conversation to be over. She even says, I just want to go and play outside. So she's telling them what they want to hear because they've led her into saying these things, and it's devastating. Mm-hmm.
And full props go to Annika Vedekop as Clara. Mm-hmm. She must be, what, four or five years old?
Yeah.
Incredible. It's so remarkable for a child to act in those kind of scenes and have that kind of dialogue and still maintain that innocence that she is a child, first and foremost.
A magnificent actor.
Yeah, I think for me, I loved Mads Mikkelsen in this, but any time Clara was on the screen, I was engrossed. I cannot believe, I mean, God, I couldn't even tie my shoelaces when I was her age.
When she's older now, we'd have to refer to her as a former child actor.
Oh, for God's sake.
We have to, Gemma, this is a very tough topic and we have to be serious.
Why is this happening?
But I need to, at times, because this is going to be too bleak, it's going to get bad. You know what's going to happen. But yeah, she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Is that... The scene that we see her being interrogated is awful, but we see her go back to the house and see him.
Yeah.
And she always wants that connection. And because, spoiler alert, he isn't guilty, which we know of, the fact that she's just a sweet, innocent girl that just wants to play. She just wants to have a nice time, like all kids at that age.
She just wants to play with Fanny.
Fanny!
Fanny being the name of the dog.
Yes,
Fanny.
Of course. Fucking hell. So... But at the moment, I want to talk about Mads more because he is, for me, one of the best actors, one of the most underrated actors, because we see him in stuff like Star Wars and Marvel as these villainous characters, but we don't really get to see him what he really does when he's in his own territory, in his own country, in his own people. And this isn't a plug, I promise you, but when I met him, I'm not saying where.
A plug, but, like a brag.
No, but but when I met him, I asked him if he enjoyed playing these sort of roles or the big blockbusters, this all the way. He does stuff like Man and Chicken and stuff like that. These real small independent films from his own nation.
I think it's Man and Pig
or something like that anyway.
Man and Pig, Man and Chicken.
Man Bites Dog, it's the remake.
Man Bear Pig. But yeah, he loves these independent small films where he really gets to have the control. He's not got some big studio interfering.
Yeah.
And that's what I think he's best at.
He usually plays really powerful characters, whether they're heroes or villains. So it's odd to see him this powerless, to see him as this frumpy middle-aged teacher. It's miles away from something like Hannibal Lecter. The confidence he usually exudes is completely absent here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a build-up of fragility from him because he starts off with such kindness and care despite having problems with his ex-wife and trying to get his kid back, but it just seems as soon as everything is built, it's almost built on a house of cards. It takes one little knock and everything just comes crashing down, and it's so refreshing to see him play somebody that you're on side with, you sympathize for, and you want them to see that he's actually an innocent guy. It's just completely taken out of context. It's a shame that he's the villain.
The way that we see from the start, because at the start they're just pissing around, like jumping in a pool of water, playing as adults, and it just seems, because the community's not very big, is it? It's a small little town. You know what it's like there. The Chinese whispers must be ridiculous. You'd start a room and before you know it, the whole village knows about it. But it's just a fun environment. There's none of this big like technology stuff. It's all just about families and friends and these tight units. And we can see how one rumour can spread and turn everyone against you. And it even became, for me, it felt like The Wicker Man, where everybody's turning on this one person. The fight he has to put up with when he's just going to the shops, everyone looking at him, and they won't serve him. And it gets to the point where they walk over and punch him full on in the face.
That was the scene that affected me the most.
What, from the supermarket shop?
Yeah. From the first time, it's just a gentle look. You're not welcome here. Even his son wasn't welcome. But that second time, when he gets walloped by the butcher and some of the other co-workers, and for him to have the balls to go back in and rightfully so nut that butcher in the face and just say, give me my groceries. And it was him fighting back because he was taking so much beating from these accusations and lies. It was his turn to finally stand up and go, this ain't me.
The scene that I love is further on in the film. It's when he decides drunkenly that he's going to attend the Christmas Eve Mass.
Yeah.
So he walks into the church surrounded by all of his accusers and the people, his old friends who've turned on him, and he sits there defiantly. But then the emotions of the moment and the booze get the better of him, and he starts to well up and then has a go at his best friend Theo for Theo effectively not believing him. And it's some of the most powerful acting you'll ever see. It's fantastic stuff from Mads Mikkelsen. And the thing that I want to bring up there is Theo, the character of Theo, his best friend, who is also Clara's dad. There's a scene right near the start of the film where Theo asks Lucas something innocent, like, oh, you know, how are you doing without your wife or something? And Lucas says he's fine. And Theo says to him, no, you're not, you're lying. I always know when you're lying. And I like that the film established right at the start that Theo states, I know when you're lying. But when Lucas is accused of these crimes against his daughter, Theo doesn't believe Lucas. He goes against his own instincts of knowing when his friend is and is not lying.
Because, that's a really good point. Yeah.
That's a very good point.
Because he chose to believe his daughter. Yeah.
Which you wouldn't want to question, would you? No. If your five-year-old turns around and says his willy was sticking up or whatever he said, you'd be like, well, you shouldn't know this sort. This is too much adult content. You shouldn't know about these things. Like the teacher says when she's investigating, there's some adult things that have taken place and I need to ask you about them. Because the teacher doesn't really believe, does she, the headmaster? She's kind of like, I'm not sure what to do. But if your daughter turned around to you and said, this guy got his willy out, you'd be like, I'm going to chop him off and just kill this guy straight away. You wouldn't. No, there's no smoke without fire normally.
Yeah. You can consider it as an infection or a virus. It takes one little accusation and then it just spreads across the whole town. That teacher even says, like, children never lie.
Yeah.
She might be going against her gut reaction, but in order for her to protect the kids, she automatically has to side with them. Remember the interrogation scene, to go back on that, when the interrogator starts explicitly leading Clara to answer his questions. And I think she goes to a bin and just starts throwing up because it's too much for her.
Hearing the details.
Yeah, but of course for Clara, she's stoic, she's just getting on with it and she just wants to go outside. And that's the infection.
Yeah.
The infection of accusation and lies. It affects everybody. It doesn't just affect one person.
That scene, I know we've mentioned it already, but that scene with the guy interrogating her, the social care worker, whatever he is, Clara's amazing in that. I love the way she crinkles her little nose.
Yeah.
She does that little nasal thing that I absolutely love. And another scene that we've mentioned of how good she is when she goes to Lucas's house because she wants to take his dog family for a walk.
Yeah.
But this is after all the accusations have come out and he's been shunned. And she can't understand why she can't take the dog for a walk. And she starts crying on the doorstep. And it's like, I have seen adult actors, seasoned pros, who cannot emote like that. But this five-year-old girl could pull that off. It's extraordinary.
I'd love to actually genuinely, joking aside, what she's up to now. Because if someone starts that well, you'd hope they'd have a bit of a career and not just do a one-off. Because to cry, so it's just, maybe they just took some sweets off when she cried and they filmed it. But it's too real. It's too sincere.
It's authentic, isn't it?
That's the word.
Mm-hmm. And think about the difference with their relationship towards the end of the film, where it is proven that Lucas did not do any of these things that she said. There's a scene where they both meet across different parts of the room, and she doesn't want to go across the room because of the lines on the floor.
Yeah.
So they kind of hesitantly move forward ever so slightly. Then Lucas decides to take the step forward, pick her up and take her across the room. I didn't expect to get so emotional about that scene. That was such a powerful, hitting scene for me.
That scene is really difficult to watch because it's the first time they've seen each other or spoken to each other since the accusations have kind of died down. And even though, when I was watching this at the weekend, even though it's the second time I'd seen it and I knew exactly what happened, I'm watching that thinking, he's going to pick that kid up and then someone's going to think he's at it again and kill him. Even though I knew that wasn't what happened because I've already seen the film, it's just such a heart-in-your-mouth moment, thinking how's this going to play out. But it's perfectly innocent. He picks her up because she doesn't like walking on the lines, carries her across to the other side of the room and says, your dad's over there.
It's almost like it's proving to the viewer too, like, I didn't do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's heavy, isn't it?
Heavy is the right word.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you in a lesser film, that would be where the film ends. So it's a year on. The accusations have died down. A lot of other kids accused him because they were led into it by their parents.
Oh, yeah, the basement.
All the kids told the same story, that he was attacking him in his basement, which had a sofa that was red and all this kind of stuff. But he didn't have a basement. That was the proof that they were bullshitting.
So it was nonsense.
It was nonsense. That's correct. So at the end of this point, you know, a year's gone by. His friends are starting to come around to him for the most part. He's at this event for his son becoming a man and getting his hunting license, and he sees Clara and everything's great, and you think that's where the film would end in a lesser film. Not so. This one, you then have the hunting scene where someone takes a pot shot at him, and it's not only literal, it's also metaphorical. It's saying, no matter when you think everything's back to normal, it ain't. There might still be someone out there who still believes that rumour, and they might shoot you in the fucking head.
Who was it?
I like that, because I was reading a lot of people on IMDb, like, oh, it's definitely the head teacher, it's definitely someone from the supermarket, it's all in his mind, it was just a flashback to remind him, it never goes away. I love that.
Yeah, it's open-ended, it might be literal, it might be in his mind. I think, if I had to wager, if it was literal, I would say it was Clara's older brother.
Me too! Mm-hmm. Did you see his face at the dinner?
Yep.
Stone.
I think it's one of the retail workers, just because they just didn't seem like it had closed the book for them. They were too angry.
But to be fair, they were twats.
Yeah, true. That's a fair point. But yeah, that's the fact, and no one's right. Because the director's never come out and said what it was.
No, nor should he. It was an absolute travesty for me that Mikkelsen wasn't nominated for an Oscar for this performance. And the sad truth is, oftentimes, acting performances in foreign films get overlooked by the Oscars.
That's a goddamn shame.
He did, however, win the Best Actor at Cannes for this film, which is another big honour, fully deserved.
Good.
And this film, I know I loved it, and I knew you guys, having spoken to you about it briefly before, I know you guys liked it. I didn't expect this. It's at number 103 on the IMDb Top 250.
That's brilliant news.
I didn't realise it was that widely...
That is
loved.
Mad.
Yeah.
Because everyone I speak to is like, I've never heard of it.
Yeah. Same here. I don't know anybody that's gone, oh, yeah, The Hunt, yeah, oh, Mads Mikkelsen, yeah, I totally know what you mean. No, I've never had that conversation with anybody but you guys.
But the truth is, the only reason why I saw this film is because Mads Mikkelsen was in it. If it was just some random Danish film, even if it had great reviews, I would never have watched it. I watched it for him.
Mm-hmm. I know I seem to have a theme where I attack America quite often in this podcast.
Oh, you always attack
it. But could you imagine Hollywood doing a remake or trying to touch this style and tone and remake it? It just wouldn't work. It needed that low budget, the decent indie feel for it, and you needed Mads at that point not being this big star he is now.
Mm-hmm.
Who would it be, do you reckon? Justin Bieber is
the God Hunt. Almighty.
You know what I mean? It'd be awful, wouldn't it?
Let's not think of that, because if we think about it and if we talk about it long enough, it's going to happen.
That's the problem. Whenever we talk about something, it gets announced 2 weeks later. So
skip to drama or something
not
like that.
Not this time, please.
No. Right.
I've enjoyed this.
It's good.
I've enjoyed it. I think we've said all we need to say. Yeah. So shall we score it? Gemma, I'm going to throw it to you. What are you giving it?
I really put this on a high regarded list. You know what? Sorry, I'm going to give it a high 9 out of 10. I think it's exquisite. And I think anybody that has not seen it, get on it.
It's on Amazon Prime. So if you're listening right now, get on it. It's easy to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in two words, Mads Mikkelsen. What do you need?
He is beautiful.
What are you giving it, Mark?
For the power and for the way it's done, it's a high 8.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good rating, and it's not perfect in every way, because I just don't know, it doesn't seem like a 10 for me, but it's a fucking good film and it's a powerful watch, but it's something I won't go back to probably for a few years, because you've got to be in the right. If you haven't picked this, dude, I wouldn't watch it for another 5 years, because it's too hard work.
It's not a Friday night beer and pizza movie.
Come on, babe, we're watching The Hunt.
Lads, come on,
the dominoes in.
But I, like Gemma, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I think it's a fantastic movie. So overall, that gives The Hunt a skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
Wow.
So whose rewatch choice is next?
It's mine, dude.
Ooh.
Okay.
You know when we build up and we usually have like a reason or blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
I actually haven't got a reason for my choice.
That's okay.
It's just because I want to pick a really good sci-fi classic.
Right.
That's all my only reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
So on the next episode, we're going to be rewatching The Fifth Element.
Nice! We'll be right back.
It's now time for a brand new game show. And the good news, guys, this is a freer. That means it's a free round game, mm-hmm. unlike a wanna, mm-hmm. which is a one-off.
Thanks for your explanation.
That's a bit of skip to the end, behind-the-scenes talk. me and Ben know what that means. We'll do a freer.
Right.
We're getting to the point now where the game shows are quite hard to come up with. And sometimes, you know, some people might think we're rehashing old ones. Now, this is definitely, hand on heart, definitely not a rehash from Cast and Furious on episode 61.
No, okay? It's definitely so, not. It's, definitely
it's nothing
not.
Like that at all. It's completely fresh and new. So I'll have to explain the rules because it's so different. So what we're going to do this time around is I'm going to read out five different character names from films, but they're not from the same film. Mm-hmm. They're in right. previous different films. So it's a whole array of different film characters. But what you're really doing is thinking, who played that character? Oh, it's that actor. And then you work out, after each one is revealed, they're all in one film.
Oh.
So you're going to give me the title of the film, but only from the characters.
Gotcha.
What I don't want you to do is suddenly say the name out loud. So if I went Rocky and you went, oh, it's Sylvester Stallone, it's you two against each other. So you've mm-hmm. got to remember in your head.
In our heads?
In your own
Not
head.
Not in Ben's head.
No, yeah. It's going to be tough.
Okay.
It is going to be one of those systems where when you score a point, you get 5 if you get it on the first one, 4 if you get it on the second, 3 if you get it on the third. But it is going to get easier. So you'd hope at some point you want to be risky and go for the maybe okay. the first or second one.
Okay.
Do we have to shout our names to have a guess?
For editing, for normal reasons, that would be absolutely fantastic. But what I want to do as well is freeze you out if you get it wrong.
Okay.
But you get to come back the next time.
Okay.
Does that sound pretty easy?
No, it sounds horrendously complex.
Yes! There's going to be 5 different films that you're going to be trying to guess
okay.
from the characters that I give you from different films.
So we need to say the film title.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Remember,
I'm on board.
If you get it wrong, you get frozen out. But you get to come back in.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Do you want to know the name?
Yes.
A Test of Character.
Yeah.
Like it?
It's fine.
Yeah.
It works.
And it's not
certainly.
Silly. So no. A Test of Character.
I'm very indifferent.
It was going to be character driven for a while.
Oh, I like that.
And then it was also going to be show more character. But we're not Liverpool fans, so you know what I mean?
I think a test of character. That's the best one.
Brilliant. Yeah. Ben's actually slightly impressed by 1%, not like, great, he hasn't done something like Scorey Feldman.
Are you
ready for your first character?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rocket.
Okay.
Ooh, is he gonna sort of stitch us up here?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready.
That was worth 5 points. You're not going to go for it?
No.
No.
Your second one. Katniss Everdeen.
Who?
Katniss Everdeen.
No, do it properly.
Is Katniss right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Everdeen.
Yes.
Well
yes.
Done. Well
this
done.
Is also speech therapy, which people don't realise. So you've got Rocket, and for 4 points now, Katniss Everdeen.
I'm going to give it a guess. Gemma.
Are you sure?
Yeah, why not?
Go for it.
American Hustle?
You're correct.
I knew it was going to be that, yeah. But I thought I wanted to wait until he said Robert De Niro's character
yeah.
or something before I went for it.
Next was going to be Lois Lane, which we knew was obviously Amy Adams. Yeah. Next would have been Alfred, I've got to pronounce this right,
go on.
Border from Prestige, Christian Bale.
Right.
And then finally would have been Hawkeye, Jeremy Renner.
Mm.
Not a bad start. So Gemma, you're on 4 points.
Thank you.
Are you ready for your next film?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wayne Campbell. Any guesses for 5 points?
No.
Don't. Yes.
Nit.
The next one. Magneto.
Ben.
Are you ready for 4 points?
Inglourious Bastards.
Yes. He's correct.
Woo!
Correct. Next would have been Harry J. Sonberg, which is BJ Novak. Blofeld, which is obviously Christopher Waltz. And lastly, Joe Black, which would have been very easy for Brad Pitt. You're getting the idea
yeah.
now.
Yeah. And of course, the first two were...
Obviously, we had Michael Myers from Wayne's World. And secondly, we had Michael Fassbender from X-Men Apocalypse.
All the Michaels.
Right, so far it's going okay.
Was it four all?
Four all?
Yeah, pretty good.
Are you ready for your next one?
Okay. Yeah.
Black Widow.
Okay.
It's a little bit in your head.
Yeah.
You're thinking go for
it,
but I'm tempted.
I feel too much of a risk at the moment. I like the fact we're drawing, but I don't feel ballsy enough.
No.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Alfred.
Alfred? Not...
This is for 4 points.
Okay, Alfred. Oh. on. Oh, Gemma! The Prestige!
Correct.
Yes!
Oh, shit.
That was obviously Michael Caine from The Dark Knight. Next, we'd have had Jareth, which is David Bowie from The Labyrinth. We then would have had Logan, which is Hugh Jackman from X-Men. And finally, Patrick Bateman, which is Christian Bale from American Psycho.
Do you know what's kind of great here, Gemma? This quiz is playing out how Mark's thought process works. So he used a character from The Prestige in one of his earlier ones and then went to himself, oh, fuck it, I'll just use The Prestige as my next film.
Ben knows now that we're going to... I can assure you now that the next one, you're okay on that. I promise.
Okay, you crack the code.
8-4. Ben knows me so well. Are you ready for your first one?
Yeah.
Sure. 5 points. Chris Washington.
Didn't I go to school with him?
Yes, it's the film of your life.
I have no idea who that is.
Pass.
It's gonna get tougher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The next one is Griff.
Griff?
It's going to be tough.
Has that been shortened?
I'm 0 for 2 at the minute.
Yeah, I'm stumped.
Now it's going to get very important. Mary Poppins.
Okay, hang on.
I'm going to just guess.
Go for it.
Sicario.
He's correct.
Jesus!
So, Chris Washington is, I don't want to offend him, Daniel Kaluuya.
Daniel Kaluuya.
Kaluuya from mm-hmm. Get
from
Out.
Get Out. Oh,
Griff.
Yeah.
Was your boy himself, John Benthwell? Benthwell?
John Benthwell.
Thank you.
Benthwell.
I definitely went to school with John Benthwell.
Baby Driver. Mary Poppins, the one and only Emily Blunt. Secondly, we had this, you would have got it on this, Frankie Four Fingers, which is the one and only Del Toro from Snatch. And finally, Thanos himself, yeah. Josh yeah, Brolin yeah. from Avengers. At the moment, guys, it's 8-7 with okay. 2 to play for.
Oh, tense.
Lordy.
Oh, no, with 1 to play for.
Oh, wow.
That's even more tense.
Oh, balls, I've got to go for it.
Or, because I've done a tiebreaker, we could go for 6 if you want to.
We'll do the 5, we'll use the tiebreaker.
We'll say that when he loses. Let's play the last one.
This is the real quiz.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
For 5 points, Felicity Shagwell.
Okay, I know who that is in my head, but I'm trying to... I can't think of any big films she's been in. Oh, punt! Gemma! Boogie Nights.
Yes! She's won it, isn't she?
She's won it, yeah. Do you want to play for the 6th?
We'll do it for a bit of fun.
The next would have been J.J. McCure from Cannonball, which is Burt Reynolds. We then would have had Dewey Cox from Walk Hard, John C. Reilly. Then we'd have had Clarice, which is Julianne Moore, which is Hannibal. And finally, we'd have had Mickey Ward, which is The Fighter, which is the one and only Marky Boy.
That's on his birth certificate.
Are we going for the final one?
Just as a bit of fun. Gemma has won it fair and square.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. This is just for fun.
Just for funsies.
For 5 points, Red Mist.
Ben, Superbad.
He's correct.
Well, yes!
Which is the one and only... How do you pronounce his full name, man?
I say Christopher Mintz-Plasse, but I don't think that's correct.
Yeah.
Next would have been Sandy, which is from the disaster artist Seth Rogen, which is fair.
Rogen.
It was going to get really hard. We have Mia. You know who Mia
is.
Yeah,
Emma Stone.
From La La Land. Yep. Then we'd have had Scott Pilgrim. I think you'd have got that straight away from the one and only Michael Cena.
Michael Cena.
Yeah, I never saw him. I see him. And then finally we'd have had Donnie, which is Wolf of Wall Street, Jonas Hill.
Jonas. He got every name wrong in that
one. Also, the one and only. I'm not surprised because that's not the name.
Fucking hell.
Brilliant. Ben, if you had actually gone for the final round, you'd have only just lost 13-12.
Yeah.
But in technical, actually going for the 5 rounds, it's 13-7.
Very good, Gemma. Well done.
Thanks,
great
guys.
Work. But as it's a free rounder, Ben, do you want to come back next time as the green...
The
cream master.
Do you want to be the cream master? I will be the cream master on the next episode. Yes, please.
Single or double.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. We've had 3 weeks. 3 weeks to indulge in popular culture. So I'm expecting you to have some big, big things for me today. Marky Mark, I'm going to throw it to you first. What have you got?
This series is the second part of what made my top five TV of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra Kai Season 2.
Ooh.
Me and Ben actually had a little chat on the way to the cinema, and he said, I've heard bad things, some reviews out there. Yeah, the reviews, I'm loving it.
Reviews said it wasn't as good as the first.
It's absolutely the complete opposite for me.
Okay.
It's outstanding. The writing of this should not work. Be honest, 25, 30 years after the original, no one really gives a shit about these characters.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio is about 58 now, and I think he's older than what Mr. Miyagi was in the original. But he doesn't look it. I don't know what he's doing. Doesn't. I don't know what cream he uses on his face.
Well, I'm the cream master, so I'll
ask you. You want to talk to the cream master?
It's oil of Olay.
Is it the same as what Paul Rudd uses? Because they just don't age.
Paul Rudd uses virgin blood.
Yeah. But this series is absolutely fantastic, and we see the switch. So we know that in the original, he was the good guy, Johnny was the bad guy. They switch roles, and it carries on in this. But we have a whole new group of individuals that have joined the Cobra Kai school again, but they're a whole new guy class. So it's for the year, we have a refreshed group of characters, and they're all very likable. But the guy who plays Johnny is William Zabka.
Yep.
He's absolutely fantastic. Now, you're going to take the piss, but I think he deserves an award for his acting in this because he hasn't done anything probably since The Karate Kid. This guy delivers emotion like you've never seen. Okay, it's not like Mads Mikkelsen we've talked about 10 minutes ago, but this guy deserves an award. He won't get any because it's a YouTube series. It's not going to get to any like Emmy Awards or anything like this.
You never know, dude.
They might do something.
People used to say that about Netflix shows.
Look at him now.
Mm.
He's honestly fantastic. And we see this switch in him where he's the good guy. He's down and out, but his life's being picked up. And it sounds so stupid when I'm talking about Karate Kid as a TV series, but it's emotional.
Mm-hmm.
You see this guy break down. You see his heart go. You see how everyone turns on him. But he's the good guy in this, and we see him change. Honestly, he's absolutely... I'd give him the best TV performance of the year. That's insane, I know. Wow. There's a lot more to come from Game of Thrones and this and everything else, but this guy deserves it. Yeah, I don't want to talk about Game of Thrones.
No.
But we also have the original... Do you remember on the original film itself, we had his master, Sweep the Leg, that old guy. Yeah. He's back in this now.
How old is he?
He must be about 81. And where we talked about...
81? Where we talk, so specific.
Where we talk...
Roundabout.
I think his name's John Keyes or something like that. But anyway, he looks about 106.
That is an 81-year-old.
He's not had the same cream from Cream Master Ben. No. Honestly, it's not as good. But he's a horrible, horrible guy in this. He's still the villain. It's a great series. The soundtrack's great. And what I really like about it, it doesn't do too many nods back to the original, but it does it right. One of the last episodes, we go back to Miyagi's house, and the original cars that Daniel had in the film are still on the drive, all cleaned up, and he's teaching his son to clean them and respect these cars. But it's the actual ones from the 80s film.
Really?
And it's so cool. He's sitting there going, oh, it's the same car that he took his missus to when he went out into the night out. It's so good, dude. I don't think you'll ever watch it. I'm not sure.
No, because I'm not that big a fan of the Karate Kid films. I liked the original just fine, but it doesn't... It's not one of my childhood films that I cling to.
Yeah, for nostalgia reasons for me, it's everything. It's like it's perfect. It's so, so good. But it's on YouTube. I had to pay like £9 or something for like this membership, but I watched it all. There's only 10 and they're half an hour, so that's how I could commit to it. Five hours of my life, perfectly spent, and it's great. And actually, I know it sounds a bit sentimental, but it covers the issues of bullying right now in schools really well. It doesn't force it down you, but it shows that not always the fucking pricks get away with it. So it's good. It's a good message on it. It's really good.
Fantastic.
Well done, you.
Thank you. I actually watched something.
What have you got, Pooch?
I've got a true crime podcast.
Ooh.
It's called The Ballad of Billy Balls.
I like the name. I'm sure I saw a porno called that one.
Now, I've recommended some true crime podcasts in the past, and this is along the lines of S-Town and Dirty John. I love this so, so much. It's presented by author and broadcaster Io Tillett-Wright, and it tells the story of mystery, murder, and how grief can affect a person and the people around them for 37 years. Yes, I'm being specific.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Balls is a musician. And one day he
can't take it seriously, can you? Billy Balls.
Billy Balls.
Yes.
Good old Billy Balls. He's a musician and he meets a model called Rebecca. The two instantly fall in love and they begin a relationship amongst the backdrop of the tough New York City streets in 1970s, 1980s. One day, Rebecca comes home to find their storefront on their home cordoned off with police crawling all over the place. Billy has been shot and taken to hospital. And after 10 days showing improvements and signs that he's going to get better, he suddenly dies and he's sent to a mass burial spot where Rebecca can't give him the proper burial that he deserves. So he's buried with a whole load of unidentified bodies. Done. She can't grieve properly. So Io and his producer, Austin Mitchell, they set out to unearth what happened on that night and why it happened. Firstly, the intro music is amazing. Mark, you're going to bloody love it. It's like an 80s synth rock song, and I defy anybody who listens to this religiously and starts singing along to it, so there's that to recommend. But what's fascinating about the whole podcast is the way how it's presented. Tillett Wright and Mitchell, they create this world of New York with sounds, music. You can actually paint the picture of the city streets being really grimy and tough and a dangerous place to live. You know, there's intense love, there's violent wrongdoings, and there's like underground punk gigs. But it also morphs into many different factors. It's not strictly about what the title suggests. We get tragedy, but we get tragedy from the most unexpected sources. It's remarkable, and the way how Tillett Wright guides the listener, it's raw, it's unapologetic, but he also treats you like a friend, and he wants you to listen to the story and why it's happened. So his sensitivity and handling about the whole subject is nothing short of admirable. I suggest, if you do want to listen to this podcast, go in blind, don't read anything about it.
Well, too late now, you've just told us everything.
But you will not regret listening to this. It's fantastic. A real, real worthy contender of one of the best podcasts that has not skipped to the end of the year.
It sounds very good. I can't help but think it would be more successful if his surname wasn't Balls.
This is the 70s, man. A lot of things happened back then.
How do you discover these podcasts? Because you listen to a lot of podcasts. I do. Do you have like a long drive to work or something? How do you get them all?
My drive to work is literally 5 minutes. Oh. But I think the reason why I listen to podcasts is because I don't tend to have time to sit down and read books. This is kind of my book, if you will. So it's usually about 30, 40 minutes. And it's word of mouth. It's through Twitter. It's through Facebook. It's through Instagram. But it's also recommendations from other podcasts too. So I think recently, over the last week, I was recommended by one of our listeners, I think it's Bob Aget, apologies if I got your name wrong, about the Chernobyl diary, the Chernobyl podcast to accompany the TV show, and that is exquisite. Mm-hmm. But it's literally word of mouth.
Because some of the ones you've recommended previously, the porno, was it?
My dad wrote a porno. Well,
they've like got massive now, and they're like touring over the whole country, selling out places.
Got HBO episode too.
That's what I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Why isn't it happening to us? We need a contract.
It's going to, don't worry. Yeah,
okay. Mate, we're doing Skipfest in a couple
and
we've
of weeks.
Sold who would have ever thought that was going to happen?
Yeah, so I just want a Netflix series.
Yeah, that's all I want. It's not too much to ask, is it? I just want a Netflix series and a guaranteed $1 million. That's all I want.
That's it.
That's all I want. It's not too much.
Doesn't seem
too
much.
But yeah, that's amazing though.
Sounds very good, Gemma. Mm. I've gone with a TV show, and it's Deadwood the movie.
Oh!
The original series of Deadwood is one of TV's greatest achievements. It was this gloriously profane and violent western about the growth of a small South Dakota settlement called Deadwood and its various citizens, settlers, merchants, gangsters, prostitutes, politicians, and many more. It ran for 3 perfect seasons back in the mid-2000s, but it was unceremoniously cancelled by HBO due to financial wranglings behind the scenes and various other factors. 13 years after its cancellation, we finally get to return to the world that David Milch created, to finally tie up the story the way it deserved to be. So this film that was broadcast on HBO in the US and on Sky Atlantic here in the UK, it's set in 1889, 10 years after the end of the original series, and sees many of the original characters returning to celebrate South Dakota becoming a member of the United States of America. And that involves the return of Senator George Hearst, played by the great Gerald McRaney. He was the main villain of the 3rd and final season of the show, and he's even more villainous here. He's an irredeemably evil, murderous prick. He's absolutely, absolutely vile, and I love him. And Gerald McRaney plays him like you've never seen. And then it's up to Marshal Seth Bullock, played by Timothy Oliphant, and Al Swearengen, played by Ian McShane, to put Hearst back in his place. The show has always revolved around Bullock and Swearengen. Initially, they were adversaries, but then they eventually became wary allies, and that continues here in this film. Timothy Oliphant, I'm a huge fan of his work.
Absolutely.
Love the dude. He has never been better than he is here. Over the years, he's grown into an incredible performer. Dramatically, he was good in Deadwood to begin with anyway. He went on to do a show called Justified, if any of you ever seen that.
I have, yeah.
Magnificent in Justified. Comedy, Santa Clarita Diet.
Of course.
Wonderful. Love that
in
show.
That. Yeah, sadly cancelled far too soon. Fuck you, Netflix. But he's come back to do this Deadwood movie, and he's never been better. There's a moment towards the end of the film, I won't give you the context because I don't want to spoil anything, but he kind of breaks down in tears, and he's this strong, silent type, a real old-school cowboy. He's prone to fits of emotion, but it's usually anger, not sorrow. So to see him break down and cry, it's just magnificent work from Oliphant. Ian McShane is typically brilliant. It still blows my mind that Lovejoy is like a big TV star in the US and has been for the last few years. He plays a new shade for Swearengen, though. Swearengen in previous seasons was the swaggering boss around the town. You know, everyone looked up to him. Everyone did as they were told. But in this movie, he's in ill health. He's basically bedbound and he's trying to put his affairs in order. So it's a very different Swearengen that we're used to seeing, although he still refers to everyone as cocksuckers. Like He'll never not do that. There's a huge sprawling cast as well. You've got people like John Hawkes, Molly Parker and Robin Weigert. But Gerald McRaney is the villain Hurst. He's really the money. He's what you're there for. The film does a brilliant job of tying up all the loose ends that were left 13 years ago, and it closes the story arcs of most of the main characters beautifully. My only criticism, if I have one, is that it's too short. A two-hour film is not enough to finish this show the way it deserved to be finished. We needed another season. But the problem is, a lot of the actors who were in it are now big stars and are doing other things. David Milch, the creator and writer, has Alzheimer's now, so he's kind of struggling. So this was the best that we could hope for. But it was well worth the wait. It was magnificent.
Awesome.
Did you guys watch Deadwood back in the day? You really should.
I can't believe it's been that long as well.
Mm-hmm. I remember like the C word was like bandied around like the word the.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The C bomb is dropped at least half a dozen times in this film.
I do remember. I think there was a character, Calamity Jane.
Yes.
And she's a filthy mouthed lady.
She's amazing, played by Robin Weigert, and she's still drunk and Larry. But she gets a big heroic moment in the film that is just magnificent as well.
Definitely not on Doris Day's interpretation.
No, not so much. No. You need to watch it though, Mark. It's a remarkable show.
I just find it strange that it's been like over like a decade, and they suddenly go, right, we're going to give you a film. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. I would say it's like the quality of Westworld, but without the robots and sci-fi.
Yeah.
That's a big...
a few Fs and Jeffs in.
It's even better. It's one of the greatest Westerns of all time, whether you're talking about film, TV, whatever. Mm. It's magnificent.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah, I think you really would. Mm. It's superb.
He's cropping up everywhere. I know we saw him in Hellboy, but considering his career was Lovejoy, he's actually done quite well for himself.
Yeah, he's in American Gods as well. He's in John Wick.
He always pops up in the least likeliest of places, doesn't he?
But he's a great actor.
He is.
Sounds good. How many seasons are there?
Three, and they're only sort of 12 episodes a season.
It might actually happen.
You would enjoy it.
If something's going to happen, that sounds like the most...
You would. It's got everything.
I think it might.
It's got performance, cinematography.
Sadly not.
Oh, I'll buy it.
I imagine the box sets might well be on Sky Atlantic.
Though. Yeah, and it'll be only about 5 in CX. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Shall we see what social media have come up with?
Yes,
there's been a lot, hasn't there? Hell of a lot.
On Facebook, Joe Myers has said Brightburn was a lean, dark and twisted horror thriller about a Superman-like child who breaks bad. Now, this isn't out in the UK yet, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing it.
And also, it's got Roy from The Office in it.
It's got David Denman, Roy from The Office. Yeah, it's produced by James Gunn.
Yeah, wow.
Used to be married to Pam.
Used to be married to Pam, indeed, yeah. So that's definitely worth a watch.
Why do we have to wait so long? It does my head in.
No,
it's annoying. Is it one of those Bloomhouse ones?
I don't think it's Bloomhouse, but we are getting it soon.
Cool.
It
might be.
I don't know. On Twitter, Geeky Retro Nerd Show at Geeky Retro Nerds. They agree with you, Mark. They've said Cobra Kai. It's so freaking cool with so many nods to the Karate Kid movies. An absolutely amazing cast too.
There you go.
On Facebook, Gemma Lane said, I went to see Take That on Saturday evening. That was pretty awesome and I definitely recommend. So we were in the cinema the other day, weren't we, Mark, when we went to see Godzilla, and there was a big advert for Take That's live show beforehand, and we were kind of saying to each other, who goes to that?
Yeah.
Gemma Lane.
But to be fair to them, like, they sell out these massive places. Yeah. They're not the original lineup. There's 3 members now instead of 5, and they look like they put on a damn good show.
It's true.
Like, if you actually look at the scale of it and what they do, fair play to them, man. Yeah.
They're no BTS, though, are they, Gemma?
No way.
No, exactly not.
On Twitter, Tang Nuo at MTS_Tyra has said the Dresden Files series by Jim Butcher. The story really picks up after the first few books, but in order to get the whole picture, you need to read all of them. I'm not familiar with those, but I'll check them out. They sound interesting. On Facebook, Matthew Avery has said, I'm absolutely loving the latest season of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. It has a bonkers storyline and new whimsical characters each episode. Now, I brought this last year, the previous season, as I recommend, and Matthew's absolutely right. This current season is just as good. It's an incredible show. Arguably the best superhero show on TV, of which there are many these
days. That's
mad.
It's delightful.
I'm glad it hasn't kind of dropped down, where some of the series they've released, people don't give a shit by series 3 of, like, Supergirl. No one cares anymore.
It's true. I stopped watching Supergirl.
Exactly. Yeah. But this sounds like it's going from strength to strength.
They just lean deeper and deeper into the weirdness, and it just makes it more fun.
Awesome.
On Twitter, James Stone at StoneJ666 has said, Booksmart. It's like Supermad, but about girls with slightly more mature mature humour, very funny with two great young actresses and directed by Olivia Wilde.
I am going to watch this in the next few days.
As well you should. I went to see it this week and it is magnificent.
Beanie Feldstein?
Yes.
I love her and she's great in What We Do in the Shadows.
Beanie Feldstein has star quality. Yes. It's all well and good being a good actress, which she certainly is, and Caitlin Dever, who also stars in the film, is excellent as well. Yeah. But Beanie Feldstein has that indescribable X factor, much like her brother, Jonah Hill. She has taken that same thing from it. Did you not know that Jonah Hill was her brother, Gemma?
No.
Yeah.
Not Jonas Hill, yeah. Jonah Hill.
You learn something new every day.
Yeah. Hello.
Which makes it all the, you know, links it even more in with Superbad.
Wow, well.
The reviews are insane.
They are great.
I wish we could have reviewed it, but with schedules that we have now, we're sellouts.
Definitely check it out whenever you can, Mark, because it is an excellent film and I think you'd really enjoy it. Yeah. On Instagram, Ben, aka Suavis91, has said, saw John Ronson live at the London Palladium. He did a show about the psychological impact of being a porn star and a moving piece on the suicide of porn star August Ames. It's incredible journalism and he's a genuinely funny man.
Now, didn't you mention his name the other week about the psychopath?
The psychopath test.
Yeah?
So John Ronson is one of my favourite journalists. I've read all of the books he's written. They're all fantastic. Infuriatingly, I had a ticket to go to the Birmingham show of this particular tour, but something came up at the last minute and I couldn't go. And by something came up, I mean I had a really fucking evil hangover and I couldn't go to bed. I was in an absolute state. So I missed the show. But by all accounts, it's amazing.
It sounds like a really cool subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Stewart on Twitter at Gritster has said Renaissance Men, the new album by the Wild Hearts.
Are they still going?
Apparently. Truly some of their best work. Huge choruses and huge riffs with Ginger channeling the ghost of Lemmy with his gravelly vocals. To me, they were the archetypal Kerrang band.
Yeah.
Ginger Wildheart used to be on the front cover of Kerrang all the time in the 90s.
The fact they're still going is an achievement in itself, but good on them.
I don't think I ever listened to anything that they did.
I don't know.
I just remember their name.
But they're massive in the day.
Yeah. Chris Jarvis on Facebook has said, rewatching The Shield on the All 4 app, a great bit of telly. Have either of you guys ever watched The Shield?
Yes.
You're going to be furious. I've never seen it.
What?
I know.
It is the greatest cop show of all time and just one of the greatest TV shows of all time. I didn't know that it was on All 4, which is fantastic. I own it anyway, but for anyone who's not seen it, get on the All 4 app and watch it.
Also, early Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins was amazing in it as well. Yeah.
Michael
Chiklis was unreal. The finale, for me, is the greatest finale in TV history. Perfect.
He said it. Listen.
Do I go home and watch this, or do I go home and watch Deadwood?
Both!
The Shield ran for like 6 or 7 seasons, so you're not going to commit to that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sticking to this new Superbad film. I'm not. It's easier. That's the 2 hours to the cinema. Done. Yeah.
And then finally, Mike Donahue on Twitter, at Madman1981, has said, All Elite Wrestling pay-per-view, double or nothing. The best US wrestling show of the year, not named NXT. Hopefully some long-awaited competition to wake WWE out of their stale norm. Did you watch it, Mark?
I did, and I thought that finally someone is actually going to give Vince a bit of run for his money.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, though, really, a lot more. I don't just want a quick 2 minutes from you, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
I like it,
but
I don't think you can do it justice in 2 minutes. You're great at what you do.
Oh, thanks.
I'd like to, like, an hour 18 conversation.
Well, it's funny that you should say that and specify the exact time as well, because it just so happens that I, along with our former Skip to the End colleague, Adam, have started our own wrestling podcast.
You're joking.
Well, I'm not joking.
That's really weird that I mentioned it.
It's
like
weird,
that.
Isn't it? What a coincidence that is.
So where can I find this?
Well, let me tell you what it's called first.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
It's called I Need Five. And the reason why it's called I Need Five is because on each episode, Adam and I will talk about the top five or the top five most influential matches of a legendary wrestler.
Right.
We'll also then give you our thoughts on the current state of WWE. We'll talk about AEW and what they're up to, New Japan, if they've had a big show, NXT, of course. Our first episode is out now, and we talk about the top five most influential matches from the Rated R Superstar Edge.
Wow.
And we also review AEW Double or Nothing.
So I can hear all your thoughts Adam's about that pay-per-view if I go onto Spotify and listen to this podcast.
You can. So you can search for us on Twitter at iNeed5cast, or you can go to iNeed5.co.uk.
Yeah.
You can search for us on Spotify. You can search for us on Stitcher. Hopefully by the time this episode's out, iTunes will have pulled their thumb out their arses and verified on there as well.
Yeah. I'll go to Spotify.
Why not?
It's the best $9.99 I spend every month.
Indeed. plug.
Yeah.
You know. But you motherfuckers have been plugging your shit for years, haven't you? So it's about time I get to plug mine.
It's about time you pulled your finger out and did something else.
So true.
How lucky are the listeners? You know, they've got, we're almost like branching out with our own individual projects.
This is it.
You know?
We want to come together eventually and we all do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Skip to the end. Assemble.
Productions.
We are now, like, we're Skip Industries now.
Yep. So yeah, I like that.
We're Skip Industries. You've got Skip to the End at the top of the tree. Then you've got Mark and me. You've got Gemma's Reimagined, and you've got mine and Adam's I Need Five. All under that umbrella.
Yeah. Wow.
We're taking over the world, kids.
Let's do it. Like the Avengers, we all come together and then form Skip again. It's mad, isn't it, really? It's insane.
So as well as checking out at iNeed5cast on Twitter or iNeed5.co.uk, you can also give us your hints or your recommendations here at Skip to the End. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/SkipToTheEndPodcast, Instagram at SkipToTheEndPodcast, or email us on podcast@SkipToTheEnd.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It's 27 degrees in my flat and I'm sweating like a motherfucker.
It's very, very drippy in here.
Oh.
I don't want to take my top off because I've got boobs coming, but but it is fucking roast indeed.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's helping though.
Yeah.
This lovely Brothers Cider.
Here's to selling out Skip Fest.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Come on. If anyone knows anything about us, we are sellouts.
I'll tell you what, though, I don't agree with that, but I do agree that this Brothers, genuinely, strawberries and cream English cider is probably my favourite drink of today.
You know what? It's a summer elixir. Mm.
It really is, and it's just in time for Wimbledon. So.
Yes.
Oh, you bloody love Wimbledon.
Oh, I bloody love tennis. It's not really fucking boring or anything.
We're taking 6 months off so Ben can watch it all, and the UK Open and the US Open. And you're still going to Australia, aren't you, to watch it?
Oh, yeah, big time. Bloody I never miss it, mate.
He loves nothing more than cheering on for Tim Henman or whoever's playing.
I love watching Henman versus Rosetsky.
Have you got... He's a hen maniac.
Bloody hell.
Come on, Tim!
We've got to break some bad news to you guys.
What?
Yeah. We've just had a 3-week break, haven't we?
Yeah, which was good.
Which was great. We're having another one. Because we are lazy. No, it's because Mark and I are going to download, so it just has to shunt back the episode for a week. But it's fine. You can handle it, guys. You've handled it once. You can handle it again.
Yeah. Yep, that's the title of my sex tape. But in the meantime, you can listen to Ben's new podcast. Mm.
You can. I Need Five, available on all good services and hopefully eventually iTunes.
The week that we haven't got an episode, there will be a brand new Mark and me filling that gap.
Ooh, are you going to reveal who you're interviewing? Or are you going to keep it a secret?
I'm going to wait because I've decided. And Poochie, there'll be a brand new playlist.
There will be indeed. So don't worry, we've got you covered.
Oh, and before we move on, speaking of Mark and me, I don't think we mentioned this on the last episode, but didn't you win a really bizarre and quite amazing award?
Yeah.
Let's talk about this for a minute, please.
Biggest blagger of the year. Yeah. No. When I had Walter Day on from the King of Kong documentary, in my opinion, one of the best documentaries ever,
yep.
I thought I need to follow this up. So I actually went and got Billy Mitchell and the one and only Steve...
Weeby.
I want to say Weeby or Weeb, whatever it is, the good and the bad, but all three of them. And I thought, that's good, put to bed. A few weeks later, I got an email from Walter himself saying that they want to give me an award from the whole of the gamer community that he manages within Twin Galaxies to say how much they appreciate what I did for the community.
Yeah, you were one of their men of the year, weren't
you? So I've got my own trading card made, which is on its way from America. I was invited to California to go and get it, but you have to pay yourself. Can't afford it.
You should have demanded they pay for your flights and your hotel.
Missed an opportunity.
And do you know what it said? I said, I really can't go. I'd love to. Like, genuinely, this means a lot, but I can't make it. And he wrote back saying, Billy has said he'll personally give you the award himself if you can get out here. And I was there going... if I don't sell that and I don't do this and pay the mortgage for 6 months.
I don't eat.
But it's cool.
Very cool.
Yeah,
well done, mate.
It's coming in the post, so I'll put it on Facebook and Twitter or something when it comes out, so that'd be good.
So that's the kind of guys we are now.
Yeah.
We're doing side projects, we're winning awards, and we're putting on festivals.
And selling them out in 3 hours. Yeah. Glastonbury didn't sell out in 3 hours, so, you know.
So what's next?
Just stick around and find out.
A new episode, which is going to include...
A top 3 mystery movies.
I'm looking forward to that, because that's quite an open one. There's a lot to pick from there. Our main review will be Toy Story 4.
What?
That entirely unnecessary film, but it will hopefully be quite good nonetheless.
I actually can't believe that they are doing that, but everyone's saying it's going to be great. They wouldn't release any old shit like, you know, Trains 2 or Planes 4 or whatever they do.
Trains. I've never seen that one.
No.
They should. We joke. That will be announced.
Yeah. Cars 12.
Cars 7. What the fuck's all that about? The rewatch next time is The Fifth Element. A bit different.
I'm so looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll be movie masturbating over Mr. Clint Eastwood. What?
There's loads.
Jeez. Yeah.
It's a lot of good stuff coming up on that episode, so I know you've got to wait 3 weeks, but keep your fingers crossed, keep praying, keep hoping your heart. And we'll see you in 3 weeks.